Money in the Bank is in the books. I am live. It is Saturday night. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for being with me for my Money in the Bank review, a very newsworthy Money in the Bank. I just got done watching John Cena addressing the media at the post-show press conference. Yes, John Cena making a surprise appearance for the second year in a row at Money in the Bank. Last year, he showed up to get everybody all excited about the possibility of WrestleMania coming to London. There are no plans right now for WrestleMania to come to London. People are still waiting. But that's what he was there last year for. Tonight was very different. Tonight he was there for a very personal reason. John Cena announced his retirement. And more specifically, more accurately, he announced his retirement tour. At first he said this was his retirement, and I thought, oh my God, is the man sick? What's wrong here? But he announced his retirement tour, and he said that 2025 will see him compete in his final Royal Rumble. Now, he didn't say Royal Rumble match necessarily, but Royal Rumble, last one. Elimination Chamber, last one. WrestleMania, last one. Now, Cena has talked openly in the media in the past about wanting to go no later than the age of 50. By the time he turns 50 years old, at the latest, he wants to be done. John Cena, I believe right now, is 47 years old. If I'm not mistaken, I believe he will turn 48. Is it 48? 47 or 48? I think he's 47 right now. But his birthday is, I think, days after WrestleMania last year. So this was surprising. This was surprising that he would announce something this soon. But we do have a little more information that he did not mention on the actual event tonight, but in the post-show press conference, he made it very clear. Now, you would listen to him talking at Money in the Bank and think that WrestleMania was going to be his final match. And in fact, WrestleMania is not going to be his final match. John Cena is planning to wrestle anywhere from 30 to 40 dates throughout 2025, from January all the way through December. So John Cena is going to be wrestling for the duration of the entire year. And that is when he will call it quit. So this is not a situation where he's going to have a retirement match at WrestleMania. He'll be done at the end of next year. So we're going to get John Cena back for some time. And he didn't make that clear during the show, but again, he did in the post-show press conference. He also made very clear that when he is done, he's done. He's not coming back. He's not going to have any physicality. He's not going to take a table bump. He's not going to be a special referee. The jorts are being retired, the hat, the t-shirt. The next time we see him, he'll be in a suit and tie. It's kind of like what The Undertaker said. When The Undertaker said that, you know what, I'm officially retired, you will never see me come out and do the Undertaker entrance and chokeslam people as the dead man and the whole thing. And he hasn't. Except for one appearance he made in Saudi Arabia for Riyadh season, which had nothing to do with WWE. But we have not seen the Dead Man Undertaker since he retired. We've seen the American Badass Undertaker. But he said, no, I'm not going back to that again. You know, when I say that I'm retired from the gimmick. And that's what John Cena said tonight as well. I will also tell you that there was at least one Vince McMahon question that was addressed to John Cena. John Cena is sitting there at the table, and he is telling people, he goes, fire away whatever questions you got. Let me have them. Okay. It sounded like Brandon Thurston. I don't know if it was him or not. I could only hear voices. They weren't showing the people asking questions, but somebody asked him about Vince McMahon and said, you know, what are your thoughts on his, you know, influence on your career, and can you talk a little bit about, you know, Vince, and in light of all of the horrible allegations and everything? And that was the one question that John Cena said, you know what, I just want to talk about the future. I don't want to talk about the past. I don't want to dwell on that. He gave the Paul Levesque answer. But see, when you are having an actual press conference and you tell people, hey, I'm not leaving until all of you have a chance to ask questions. And, you know, I may piss Paul off and Punk, right? They're waiting, but hey, ask whatever you want. You're going to get questions like that. But he wouldn't answer it. So it was wild, though, to hear Vince McMahon name dropped on Peacock during a WWE broadcast. That I I was not expecting, but you know what? That's the sort of thing you should ask about at a press conference. So yes, John Cena is nearing the end, and we've kind of known this for a while. You know, we've seen Cena the last few times in the ring, the match with Austin Theory. You know, I mean, he it's not the same John Cena. You know, whether it's a matter of just age or whether it's a matter of age and him trying to protect himself so that he doesn't get hurt and it doesn't impact his filming schedule and his shooting schedule. You know, right now they gave him a weekend off. He's in the middle of filming season 2 of Peacemaker. Whatever it is, this is not the same John Cena as an in-ring performer of even 5 years ago. So him doing 30 to 40 dates, and a lot of that could also be dark matches at certain shows. We don't have all the details. But there's going to be a lot of people talking about what potential opponents, you know, Cena should be getting into the ring with, and who do you put in the ring with him at WrestleMania? You know, does he go after the title one last time because there's a story there to be told about number 17? There's so many different things that you can be doing with John Cena in his final year. Now that we know it's going to be his final year, there'll be plenty of time to fantasy book stories and potential opponents for him. But it does feel like the end of an era. Even though he's been part-time now, very part-time for a while, it's not like he's been around all that much, just the finality to it. He was such a big part of this company for such a long period of time. He was Vince's guy. Maybe a little too much. He banked everything on John Cena. John Cena was basically carrying this company for years because Vince McMahon refused to push anybody at that same level, and nobody got over at the same level that John Cena did for a good chunk of that run because the focus was so heavily on him. They had so much invested in him as this top babyface, and he would get booed in a lot of the arenas. And then a funny thing happened in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, people seemed to gain a newfound appreciation for John Cena. And now, of course, they call him the GOAT. That's how they brand him now in the company. Some people look at him as the GOAT. Some people think that, man, that run that he had and all the different people that he worked with, you know, he's the greatest of all time. Do I think he's the greatest of all time? No, I don't. But I have an appreciation for what John Cena brought to this company for many years. And this company probably would have been in pretty rough shape if they did not have somebody like John Cena, who got over in the way that he did, despite all the boos. He carried that company for so long. You know, that whole era really revolved a lot around John Cena. So this is going to be the end of an era in a lot of ways, and it'll be sad when he is done and closes that chapter on his career. It's big news that we now have dates to put to this, but we have all of 2025 to see exactly what John Cena's final year is going to look like. They closed the show tonight at Money in the Bank. That was one of the questions I had. How are they going to close this show? What match are they going to close the show with? Because when I gave my predictions, I mapped out the match order, and I said, I think you open the show with the men's Money in the Bank match, and you don't have to close with the World Heavyweight title match, but I think you close with the World Heavyweight title match unless Roman Reigns is going to come back. And there was no Roman Reigns on the show tonight. I was not expecting him to be there. In fact, his father was laid to rest today. So I don't think that Roman Reigns was going to attend his father's funeral service and then rush across the border to Canada so that he can make an appearance at the end of the show of Money in the Bank. So John Cena, Roman Reigns, was not there tonight. But I was surprised because they closed the show with the Bloodline 6-man tag team match. And when I saw that, I thought, well, they must have something big planned. Maybe it's not Roman. Maybe it's someone else. Maybe there's some other big twist that we're not thinking of. Surely something is going to happen here at the end of this match. And something did happen at the end of this match. Solo Sikoa pinned the WWE champion. He pinned Cody Rhodes right in the middle of the ring and won the match for the Bloodline. It was predictable, but you should have seen it coming because the rumors have been there. The signs have been there now for weeks about what our SummerSlam main event was going to be. And if you watched SmackDown last night, that very last segment at the end of the show, which was a 2-minute pre-tape that had Solo sitting at the head of the table telling us that he was going to challenge Cody Rhodes and take that WWE title back into the bloodline, bring it back into the family. That right there told you what your SummerSlam main event was going to be. So actually, him pinning Cody Rhodes makes all the sense in the world. But that's how they went off the air. There was no big return or debut or plot twist or Randy Orton showing anger at the fact that Cody Rhodes lost. There was nothing. It was just Solo Sikoa pinning Cody Rhodes and the bloodline standing tall. And I'm okay with that, but it surprised me that they would close with that as opposed to closing with something else. I thought it was a hell of a main event, though, and I could say that about pretty much every match on this show. This was an excellent show. Whatever you think about the booking, whatever you think about the way in which they use the Money in the Bank on this show, I thought this was an excellent show. The matches, they all delivered, although there was one in particular that scared the hell out of me. But Drew McIntyre, coming into this show tonight, he vowed that not only was he going to win Money in the Bank, he vowed that he would cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase on this same night. And he did. He won Money in the Bank. He cashed in Money in the Bank. Drew McIntyre is not the World Heavyweight Champion because Chicago Phil made a trip across the border to Toronto and he gave Drew McIntyre a very bad night. So now the heat is on. For Punk and McIntyre, Punk was there tonight. He was getting physical. I can't imagine he's not medically cleared. And so the stage is set not only for Cody and Solo, the stage is set for Drew McIntyre and CM Punk to have their big match at SummerSlam as well. When the show was over, Drew McIntyre stormed the set backstage where Jackie Redmond was sitting with Big E and Wade Barrett, and he was an absolute madman. He was looking into the camera. He was saying, Punk, I know you're in the building. I know you're still here. Referees came over. McIntyre threw them to the ground. Adam Pearce came over, tried to wrap his arms around Drew to calm him down. Adam Pearce got assaulted by Drew McIntyre. And so it took Wade Barrett, his good friend, to get up and to restrain him and to try to calm him down and to escort him away before something bad happened. But he's yelling at Punk, I know where you live. This man has now gone off the deep end. And this right here is why, coming into this show, I said, this is exactly how it's going to play. Play out exactly the way that I told you it would. And there's going to be a lot of people who are very upset that they burned through the Money in the Bank briefcase. But I don't have an issue with that. Plus, you already have another Money in the Bank briefcase, and it is held by Tiffany Stratton. Ms. Money in the Bank. That's the match that scared the hell out of me. Now, even though it started rough and it scared the shit out of me right up until the very end, I will say that they did win me over by the end. It was actually an incredible match for so many different reasons, both good and bad. But you had two tremendous Money in the Bank ladder matches. Very different in some ways, but I thought both matches delivered this year. As did all the matches on this show, and we're going to go through each and every one of them, but we had more news as well. This has been rumored for the last few weeks, but it was confirmed by WWE today. They're bringing back Bad Blood, and they are bringing it back the first Saturday in October, October 5th. Bad Blood is coming to Atlanta, Georgia, 27 years to the day of the very first Bad Blood, 27 years to the day of the very first Hell in a Cell, 27 years to the very day that Kane made his WWE debut, still the greatest debut in WWE history. And so they are going to celebrate by bringing back Bad Blood on that show. There have been rumors that they want to do a Hell in a Cell match on that show. That has Drew McIntyre and CM Punk written all over it. All over it. Kick it off at SummerSlam, you do a second match maybe in Berlin, you come back at Hell in a Cell, you blow it off there. I mean, tell me, is there any other feud right now in WWE, singles feud, one-on-one, that would be more appropriate for a Hell in a Cell blow-off than CM Punk and Drew McIntyre? and they haven't even had the first match yet. I'm already looking ahead and booking the final match. They haven't even had the first match yet. But Bad Blood is official. The only question I have is, will there be blood at Bad Blood? How do you have a pay-per-view with the word blood in it, but you don't actually have blood on the show? I would imagine somebody is going to bleed, even if it's fake blood. This is your Money in the Bank 2024 review. I am the Solomonster. Thank you for joining me here on a Saturday night. Let's get into this here, because they opened with the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match with Drew McIntyre, Jey Uso, LA Knight, Chad Gable, Carmelo Hayes.
Roman Reigns.
Not Roman Reigns. No. Roman Reigns was not in the match.
Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
That's a lie. It was Andrade. Andrade was in the match.
It's Samoa Bro.
Can you imagine Roman Reigns came out, just like beat the shit out of Chad Gable, took his spot in the Money in the Bank match, just to get his rematch with Cody Rhodes? So now they have ads, not on the briefcases themselves. They have advertisements on the hooks, you know, where they have the carabiners and they have the hooks up there that hold the briefcase. Now they have ads on the hooks. So we've got, let's see here, we've got the Prime logo on the mats and the turnbuckles. We have ads on the LED ring posts. We have ads on the LED barricades. We have, what else? What am I missing here? There's something. Oh, the top of the announce desk as well. They had branding on the lid of the announce desk. There is nothing that they will not brand. That's how you know this is truly new management in this company. There is nothing. You know, Vince McMahon always wanted a clean ring, but there is nothing that this company will not brand. Here, if you're interested to know, this entire match, they were advertising The Boys on Amazon Prime. We actually had two sponsors during this match with the word Prime in it. We had Amazon Prime, we had Prime Hydration. Every time they went to a replay, we had Prime Hydration and we had Wheatley American Vodka. I mean, couldn't get away from it. You couldn't escape it for the entire match. Now, I'm not going to tell you every single fucking spot that happened in this match. That would be insane. But I will highlight to you the ones that caught my eye. There was a springboard Spanish fly off the middle rope where Andrade took Carmelo Hayes over onto a ladder that was laying in the ring. So they both land on this ladder with this Spanish fly, ribs first. Then there's Chad Gable. I'm a big fan of Chad Gable. I didn't think he had a chance. A few weeks ago, I would have said differently, but last 2 weeks, it became pretty clear to me he's not winning this match. But I was very happy that he was in the match because he doesn't have a lot of PLE matches to his name. So I'm glad that he was even being featured here. But you know what never gets old with me? It never gets old with me to see Chad Gable suplexing fools around. No matter how big or small they are, him just in the ring throwing people around, that's what we had here, suplexing guys left and right. He gave Carmelo Hayes a chaos theory, but he twisted Hayes in midair as he was taking him over to save the man's life before he landed on one of the ladders. Gable pulled the straps down. He did a German suplex on a ladder. Now, let me clarify. I'm not saying he did a German suplex onto a ladder. I'm not saying he did a German suplex off of a ladder. He literally suplexed a ladder, and it landed on Andrade's neck. Like, he was going crazy here in this match. There was another point, Gable was standing on the rungs between the two ladders that were set up in the ring, and at the same time, he had an ankle lock applied to Carmelo Hayes. We had LA Knight and Jey Uso. A few different points during this match. They were the two big baby faces in this match by far. The two big mega baby faces here. And so they teased confrontations with them at different points during the match. But at one point, they teamed up to stop Drew McIntyre. They hit him with Knight hit him with a BFT. Jey Uso went up, hit the Samoan splash. Jey and Knight then both tried to head up the ladder at the same time until Carmelo Hayes tipped the ladder over and they both fell off. So Hayes now races up the ladder, and he nearly has the briefcase, but Andrade stops him. Now, Andrade set up a ladder bridge between the standing ladder across the middle rope. LA Knight, though, he throws Andrade off the top of the ladder. As Andrade is being thrown off the top of the ladder, it resulted in him executing a sunset flip powerbomb, a sunset bomb, by Andrade to Carmelo Hayes, who just, I mean, it looked like the worst possible landing. Not that there's a good landing on a ladder bridge, but my God, he slammed and bounced off of the ladder. He slammed down onto the ladder and bounced off of it. That looked brutal. It also took him and Andrade out of the rest of the match. So the two of them were done for. Gable grabbed LA Knight, and I could see exactly where they were going here because there was another ladder bridge on the outside of the ring with the ladder across the ring apron and the top of the announce desk. And Chad Gable grabs LA Knight, and he delivers a belly-to-belly suplex over the top rope, and LA Knight crashes down onto the ladder bridge on the outside. That was terrifying. So then Gable looked like he was all clear to head up top and grab the briefcase. Jey Uso, though, pushed the ladder away, which left Gable, who was hanging from the carabiner. He was dangling. No ladder. His legs are just flailing away underneath him, and he is hanging down from the carabiner above the ring. Well, from the whole hook apparatus above the ring, and he's swaying back and forth. So, like, what's he going to do? Eventually, he just drops, and he falls and crashes all the way down to the mat, face first. He stumbles back to his feet. Jey Uso cuts him in half with a spear. Jey then climbs the ladder. He comes dangerously close to grabbing the briefcase, but Drew McIntyre stopped him by throwing another ladder up at his face, and that knocked Drew off the ladder. McIntyre caught him with a claymore kick. That knocked Jey Uso out of the ring. And McIntyre climbed the ladder. He grabs the briefcase. And in his fifth attempt, apparently, I think including tonight, this might have been number five. But in five attempts in these Money in the Bank ladder matches, and after two losses, two title losses in his career to Money in the Bank cash-ins, Drew McIntyre wins the Money in the Bank briefcase to open the show. An excellent Money in the Bank match, I thought, with all the crazy spots that you would expect. Everyone got a chance to shine here. I think no one more so than Chad Gable. Gable, this was his, not only was this his first Money in the Bank match, this was Chad Gable's first ladder match. He's never had a ladder match in his entire career. So he was in there, and he looked like a man with a purpose. He looked like a man who honestly was having a lot of fun. He was like in his sandbox, playing with all his new friends and all his new toys. And Gable is, I mean, Gable's a wrestler. You know, Gable's not the kind of guy that's going to go in there and do ladder matches and hardcore matches and extreme rules matches. But he thrived in this environment. I thought he had a great showing here. He just looked like a machine. Carmelo Hayes was very impressive in this match. Andrade's big moment was that sunset bomb off the ladder. No one gave him a chance coming into this. Even still, though, I thought he looked great here, too. Jey Uso, super over. LA Knight, super over. But the moment that Drew McIntyre qualified last week, he beat Sheamus and Ilya Dragunov, and he qualified to be in Money in the Bank, is when I knew this man is winning Money in the Bank. And any thought that I had that Jey Uso might win, Chad Gable's got a shot, maybe Chad's going to do it, it went out the window. And I knew that Drew McIntyre was going to win this match. I figured that CM Punk was going to not cost him the briefcase, but he was going to cost him the cash-in later in the show. So I wasn't expecting a CM Punk appearance here in this match, and we didn't get it. But I will tell you what surprised me the most. The one thing I did predict that did not happen was that LA Knight would not win because of Logan Paul. We had Prime branding all over the fucking place. We had Prime branding on the turnbuckles, and we had Prime branding with the Prime hydration station with the giant fucking bottle on the outside. It's in the middle of the ring. Logan Paul was represented all over the place in this match, except Logan Paul himself was not there. That surprised me. I was very surprised by that. I thought for sure that he was going to rear his head in some way, do something to take LA Knight away from the match, whether it was a distraction or whatever it was, and he didn't. He just didn't win. Just like Jey Uso, right? Nobody fucked him over. He just didn't win. And that's okay. But it surprised me. Because I really did. I felt Logan Paul would be a presence here in some way. But otherwise, it went exactly the way that I figured. And then it set drama up for the World Heavyweight title match later in the show. So, a predictable finish, but an excellent Money in the Bank match. Then we had Sami Zayn defending the Intercontinental Championship against Bron Breakker. This was a match I was very much looking forward to here. This was Bron Breakker's first big match since getting called up to Raw. His first big PLE match. I can't think of a better opponent than Sami Zayn. Wrestling Sami Zayn in Canada, that's pretty cool. So they followed an excellent opening match with another excellent match here. Bron Breakker, maybe the best news of all. The best news of all, he has new theme music. His last music, very generic. I mean, they already got rid of his NXT music, so the music he had previously was very generic. And I don't want to say that this one isn't generic in you know, to some degree, but it's much better than the theme he had before. Just based off what little I heard of it here, much better than his old one. So Braun worked over Sammy with his power, a lot of power moves for a good part of the match. I don't want to say he took most of the match because that's not really true. Every time he would do something, Sammy was there to come back, you know, and bounce back in some way. Sammy countered a spear attempt with the Blue Thunderbomb. Breakker kicked out. Braun positioned Sammy across the top turnbuckle and then ran full force, jumped up to the top rope, and he hit the Frankensteiner. And it always looks amazing when he does it because he's already falling backwards before he ever makes the jump. Like, you can see he's letting his body already fall backwards, and then he throws his legs up in the air, takes the guy over. So as impressive as that looks, what was just as impressive here, I thought both men were impressive on this spot, was Sami Zayn, because the way he went over for it, it was just a thing of beauty. Outside the ring, Breakker circled around, came charging in for a spear. Zayn, though, leapfrogged him. Now, Braun stopped short. He put the brakes on before he ran into the ring steps. Breakker instead flattened Sammy with a leaping clothesline from the apron. Sammy was up against the announce desk. And so Braun did a vertical leap up onto the apron and then dove off. Same thing he did to Ludwig Kaiser on Raw a few weeks ago. Dove off the apron, caught him with a clothesline. Both men go over the announce desk. Back in the ring, Breakker hits a gorilla press slam. Now he's got Sammy in prime position for the spear. I think he even pulled the straps down. And he's got him in position for it. He comes in for the spear. Sammy, though, as he charges in, Sammy kicks him in the head. And then he caught Braun in the corner with a haluva kick. And then he covered Bron Breakker and he pinned him 1, 2, 3 with his finish to retain the Intercontinental title. This was great stuff. I had Sammy winning. I know there were a lot of people who thought this was going to be Braun's moment. He was going to walk out as the champion. I never felt that way. It just never felt to me like this was going to be a title change. Sometimes you just get that feeling. Because you look at the way Braun has been protected and built up until this point, it would have been very believable to think that, all right, let's beat Sammy in Canada. We'll have Braun go over and we'll belt him and we'll really push him to the moon. But it just felt to me like they were maybe saving that for a bigger show, like a SummerSlam. So I wasn't surprised by the finish, but I was surprised that they had him win with the haluva kick. Just kicked him in the face and pinned him clean in the middle of the ring. 1, 2, 3. I was figuring that it would be like a flash pin, some roll-up type finish where he wins, but, you know, Braun's like, man, I had you beat. You got lucky, right? Well, you know, here, He beat him with his finish. It was pretty decisive in the middle of the ring. That surprised me. But this was the best showing yet for Bron Breakker on the main roster. He hasn't been up full-time for very long. It's only been a few months. He's had a few really good matches on TV, but this was easily his best one. And when it was over, they showed him he was sitting on the floor outside looking up at Sammy, and he was seething. So you have to think that this issue between them is not over yet. And I think he gets the title at SummerSlam. I had somebody who had pitched the idea to me, and I can't rule it out that maybe they're saving the title for Jey Uso. You know, Jey Uso still has yet to win a singles title, and maybe there's a story there to pursue where he and his good friend Sammy come together, right? And he's number one contender, and he beats Sammy to win the title. I don't know that I like that, although he is super over. I mean, the fans would love to see him win the title, I'm sure. I don't know that that's the direction they're going in, though. I still feel like SummerSlam, we end up with a fatal four-way. Braun is still going to be part of this in some way. You throw Sheamus in there, Ludwig Kaiser, who I think is going to be back in the next couple of weeks. I don't think his injury is... The broken ribs, I think, are not going to keep him out for an extended period of time. I could see a four-way match at SummerSlam with Braun winning the title there and not necessarily pinning Sammy to do it. But that, I think, is the most likely scenario. But again, this was great stuff. They aired a few minutes of footage from the WrestleMania 40 documentary that dropped on YouTube this week. I'm going to have a full review of that documentary on the Sound Off tomorrow. So watch for that. Then we had Trish Stratus, Toronto's own, making her way out onto the stage. She was the host of Money in the Bank. They announced this the other day. So Trish came out, and she came out to announce John Cena down to the ring. So out comes John Cena. He's got a brand new t-shirt, because of course he does. He comes out.
Do you feel him, sir?
Oh, I feel him. All right, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling this. So John Cena is out there. 2 years in a row, we get a surprise appearance at Money in the Bank from John Cena. I said before, last year, he teased a London WrestleMania. This year, he said he was here to officially announce his retirement from the WWE. And everybody in the crowd was shocked. Everybody in the crowd chanted no. He said he wants to talk about why. Why here? Why here in Toronto? He wants to talk about Canada, he said. He wants to talk about Canadians. He's been in WWE for over 2 decades, and one of the most impressive things that he's learned is that whether the WWE product is hot like it is now, or if the WWE product is cold, the Canadian fans always show up. They all built this to what it is today, which makes this the perfect place to say what he's got to say. But why now? Because it's Money in the Bank, the ultimate symbol of opportunity. And this farewell does not end tonight. It is filled with opportunity. Raw makes history, he said, next year when they move to Netflix, and he says that he will be there. He wants to be on Raw when it moves to Netflix. He said the 2025 Royal Rumble will be his last. The 2025 Elimination Chamber will be his last. And he's here tonight to announce that in Las Vegas, WrestleMania 2025 will be his last WrestleMania that he competes in. Not that he can't make an appearance, but that he will be wrestling. This is it. WrestleMania 41. And right there, no matter what else they have on that show, they already have a huge attraction now for WrestleMania next year. John Cena's farewell. I can only hope that they come up with a better WrestleMania farewell, because again, it's not going to be his last match, but a better WrestleMania farewell than Baron Corbin for Kurt Angle in 2019. I certainly hope they could do better for John Cena. It should have been John Cena against Kurt Angle back in 2019, but we were deprived of that. So he mentioned that he would be fielding any and all questions at the press conference coming up after the show. But right now, he wants to say thank you. And he had tears in his eyes. It sounded like he was getting a little emotional. He said he wants to say thank you. Thank you for your voice because it's beautifully brutal, which to him it was for many years. He also promised to return to Toronto to kick some ass. I'm sure one of the 40 dates he's working next year will be at the Scotiabank Arena. He says, if you want some, come get some, because the last time is now. So again, he is turning 50 in a few years, and I thought that he would go until he was 50, but he's calling it quits now. And he actually said at the press conference after the show, as far as why now, that that was a WWE call. It wasn't his decision. It was WWE that came to him and said, hey, what do you think about this? And he loved the idea, and he agreed to it. So it's not that Cena made the call like, I've got to be done in 2025. This is what WWE proposed, and I guess he was able to work it out, you know, with his schedule. And that's impressive in and of itself because, you know, for years with The Rock, for example, he was so busy. It was always The Rock's schedule, and that's why we couldn't get The Rock back for a match at WrestleMania. The Rock is so busy, The Rock, The Rock, The Rock. And Cena was also, you know, making a lot of movies and doing more stuff. But he has carved out enough time to work 30 to 40 dates from January to December next year. So he's going to be wrestling a fair number of matches. And I guess whatever he's going to be filming or doing, they're just going to have to work around it because it's that important to him. You know, it'd be very easy for him to go, you know what? I can't do this. I'll come back when I can. You know, but I'll do a WrestleMania match, you know, but I got to go here and I got to film this and that. But you could tell that it still means something to him, that he wants to give back. He wants to be here for more than just one match. It's not enough. Like when he came back, the last run that he had, I mean, that was like a solid 3-month run. That was with the writer's strike, you know, and he got permission so he could come back to WWE. And maybe it was 2 months, but whatever it was, I mean, it was a pretty, you know, decent little run there that he had for himself. So I don't get the impression with him that he would be satisfied just coming back for one match or two matches. Like, if he's going to come back, he wants to be able to be in it for an extended period of time. He wants to be a part of the roster. He wants to, you know, he wants to feel like he's one of everybody else, and he's not just showing up for a quick cup of coffee here. So, you know, and good on him for that, because I always got the impression that this still meant something to him. Whereas, you know, it'd be very easy for him to just say, you know what, that was a part of my life. It's over. I'm in Hollywood now. He never forgot where he came from. Now, question turns to, what do you do with John Cena as far as the matches? Who do you put him in the ring with? WrestleMania is coming up. We know now it's going to be his final WrestleMania. If we get Rock and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania in Las Vegas, and it could be Rock and Cody, but if it's Rock and Roman, that opens Cody Rhodes up to another match. Could we see John Cena and Cody Rhodes for the WWE title at WrestleMania next year? There's a definite story to tell with number 17. I'm not even sure I would give it to him. I don't think he needs to be a 17-time champion, but I mean, you're a fool if you don't think there's a good story there that they could lean into and tell with John Cena trying to set the all-time WWE record and become a 17-time world champion. And the journey that he takes to get there. And maybe that's at WrestleMania. Maybe he wins the Royal Rumble. Again, I'm not saying I want John Cena to win the Royal Rumble. We're just gaming this out here. If John Cena won the Royal Rumble, he would have the ability to decide which title he would want to challenge for at WrestleMania, with the story being that he's going for number 17, whether it's the WWE title, whether it's the big gold belt on Raw. And that's a story that I think people would get behind. Can he do it? You know, can he set the record? Cody, I know Cody would love to work with Cena. In fact, one of the appearances that Cena made, I remember it was him and Cody, and Cody whispered something to him. I think Cody was trying to get him to agree, like, hey, you and me, you know, let's do a match. So I'm sure Cody Rhodes would love to work with John Cena. You can't rule it out. You can't rule out one more WrestleMania main event for John Cena. I don't know physically he's not the same performer that we saw in those WrestleMania main events in the past. So from a match perspective, I'm not really hot on that idea. But from a story perspective, you got to admit, it would be a pretty good sell if they wanted to go down that road. If not that, what about CM Punk? Doesn't have to be at WrestleMania, mind you. I mean, now that we know that he's going to be working the entire year, I think it's likely he wrestles all these people at one time or another. It could be on a B show. It could be a fucking Backlash, you know, next year. We could get John Cena against Cody Rhodes. We can get John Cena against CM Punk one last time. CM Punk is, in my opinion, and I've said this before, some people say Edge. I think CM Punk is John Cena's greatest rival. It's not Randy Orton. Just because they've wrestled a million fucking times doesn't mean he's his greatest rival. I don't think it's Randy Orton. I don't think it's Edge. I think they're right there, but I think it's CM Punk. And I always loved the matches that those two guys had, whether it was Money in the Bank in 2011, whether I know they wrestled also at SummerSlam. I think there might have been a Night of Champions match in there. The last match they had on Raw back in 2013 was one of the best matches all year, certainly on Raw. I would love to see Punk and Cena for nostalgia's sake one more time. The reason I say also that Punk was his greatest rival is they were just polar opposites. Everything that Cena stood for was the antithesis of what CM Punk stood for. And it's true what they say, you know, opposites attract, you know? And so I think that also contributes to what made them such great rivals. I'd love to see them back in the ring one more time. But I mentioned Randy Orton. Randy Orton and John Cena, you know, if you've been listening to my show long enough, and I've been doing this a fucking long ass time, you know that there was nobody more sick and tired of seeing John Cena and Randy Orton against each other in the ring than yours truly. It was a running joke on the show for many years. Now, again, this was a long time ago. But, I mean, it was an absurd number of times it felt like that I had to sit here and watch these two wrestle each other. It was ridiculous. Well, now many years has gone by. Many, many, many years have gone by. This is John Cena's swan song. This is his final year. It would be appropriate if they wanted to do John Cena against Randy Orton at WrestleMania 41. It is almost impossible for me to believe, with all of the matches that they had and a lot of pay-per-view main events, out of all of those matches, at no point did John Cena and Randy Orton have a singles match at a WrestleMania. The closest was a triple threat. Triple H was in there. Never had a singles match at WrestleMania. It's almost impossible for me to even conceive of that. It would be very appropriate if we finally got that one singles match at WrestleMania on next year's show. So if I had a vote for what Cena's Mania match was going to be, I think I tend to lean towards Randy Orton. You know, it's pretty clear, you know, we had John Cena against Austin Theory at WrestleMania last year. And it's sad, but looking back on it, and it was pretty clear not long after the match, John Cena going in there and wrestling Austin Theory and doing the honors for him didn't mean shit for Theory. And that's not John Cena's fault, necessarily, although he cooked that young man when it came to the promos that they did on TV. He didn't do Theory any favor. Not only did he not do Theory any favors by cooking him on the mic, but just the things that he said to him, like, you're not even worth my time. You don't belong in the ring with me. You're boring. When you come on TV, people change the channel. The reason it was so biting is because it was true. And there was nothing that Theory did in that WrestleMania match or coming out of Mania that did anything to change my mind about anything that Cena said. But it's not Cena's fault that, you know, the Triple H and the Brain Trust over there dropped the ball with Austin Theory coming out of WrestleMania. This guy got a big win over John Cena. What the fuck did he do coming out of that WrestleMania show? So I don't want to see John Cena just wrestling just the younger guys throughout the entire year and just either beating them or doing jobs. I want to see him have some marquee matches against big names, because he wrestled Theory and it meant absolute fucking nothing to the career of Austin Theory. It's cool for Theory to be able to say that he had a WrestleMania match with John Cena, but what did it mean? Did it elevate him in any meaningful way? He seemed to be less over coming out of that WrestleMania than he was going into it. But if Cena's going to be working the entire year, I think it's inevitable we're going to see him in the ring with Bron Breakker, and we're going to see him in the ring with Carmelo Hayes, and we're going to see him in the ring with people like that, and that's cool. I only hope that if he does work with these people, they can actually get something out of it as far as coming out of that match or that program feeling like a bigger deal than they did when they went into it. It was almost shocking to me, considering how big of a name Cena was for so long, how little that win ended up meaning to Austin Theory. But that's more of an indictment on the booking, honestly, than anything else. I mean, that was a big misstep on their part. One thing that Cena made very clear also in the post-show press conference tonight is that he is not in the business of picking opponents. He has never lobbied. He's never gone to Vince or anybody else and said, hey, I got to work with this guy. I want to work with that guy. He said that in the past, too. Like, he just, whatever the company wants him to do, he'll do. He's always been the consummate company guy, which is why Vince loved him so much and kept him on top for so many years. Out of all of the top guys that Vince McMahon promoted, probably in his entire tenure in that company, the one who I will guarantee you gave him the fewest headaches was probably John Cena. Because Cena probably just said yes, boss, to pretty much everything. Right? That's probably what he did. I mean, he seems very deferential to management there. And like, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. So this is not a case where Cena has an opponent in mind that he wants to wrestle. He's going to go with whatever the company wants him to do. And I can only hope that whatever Triple H and Bruce and the whole team there come up with, that it is worthwhile for John Cena's final year. I'm sure it will be. I think they'll put plenty of thought into it and, you know, prepare a pretty good list of opponents for him. But let the fantasy booking begin. Because, you know, everybody is going to be coming up with what matches they'd like to see John Cena in. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself comparing your life to someone else's on social media? I feel like we're all guilty of that at one time or another. Especially these people or these influencers who have like hundreds of thousands or millions of followers. They're posting pictures of their fancy houses or vacations they're taking around the world. I'll be sitting here sometimes thinking, how do I get that? I want that. It's easy to envy what other people have or what you think they have, because a lot of people project happiness, but that doesn't mean they are happy. There are lots of people who live with far less who end up much happier than those who have money and nice things. Therapy can help you focus on what you want in your life rather than what others have, so you can start living your best life. Therapy can do so many amazing things for you. It can help you understand yourself better and better understand the things that are troubling you and how best to fix them or work around them. Just having someone to talk to about these things can be immensely helpful. It's okay to admit that you don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I wish I did. Sometimes I think I do. And then reality smacks me in the face and I realize, boy, was I wrong. And that's okay. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to work around your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and rest easy, knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Damian Priest was in the back. He was warming up in the bullpen. He was warming up in the Judgment Day clubhouse. Finn Balor told him it was time to punish Seth Rollins. And Priest told Balor, he told Dominic, he told JD McDonagh and Carlito not to get involved in the match tonight, no matter what. Do not get involved in my match. Once Priest left the room, the camera lingered on Finn Balor. His expression changed. He didn't look very happy. And he said, whatever you want, boss. By the way, can I just say, I love how Carlito has just become an official member of the Judgment Day. He's with them everywhere they go. At first, he was just hanging around them to, you know, get some cover from the LWO and not get his ass kicked by Ray and all those guys. But it's been like, how long has it been now? It's got to be 2 months, right? He's there every week. He's playing video games. So I just love how he's become the most, like, the unlikeliest member of the Judgment Day, but there he is every single week. And then it was time for the World Heavyweight Championship. Damian Priest defending his title against Seth Rollins, the only two men in the history of WWE to cash in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, and both successfully. So the stipulations were that if Seth Rollins wins the match, Damian Priest must leave the Judgment Day. And I told you guys coming into this, I said, this Judgment Day story has been playing out for so many months. And you see what is going on here in the power dynamic between Finn Balor and Damian Priest. And you're going to have Damian Priest exit the Judgment Day because he lost the match to Seth Rollins? You know how fucking stupid that would be? I said, Damian Priest is not losing this match. Now, the flip side of this is that Rollins agreed if he can't win, he can never again challenge for the World Heavyweight title so long as Damian Priest is the champion. I said, yeah, I think that sounds about right. He's not going to have to wait very long. Seth Rollins can afford to take a loss here in this match. But this was his first match back since WrestleMania, since the knee surgery that he underwent. Priest, from the moment the match started, all throughout the match, him and Rollins, but mainly Priest, kept turning and looking at the aisleway, just waiting for Drew McIntyre to come out and cash in Money in the Bank. So this man, like Chad Gable, when he came out for the Money in the Bank match earlier, he was looking over his shoulder for the Wyatt Six. That was Damian Priest here all throughout this match. So there was a great sense of urgency from the opening bell. These guys were going at it like they just, before they walked through the curtain, Triple H pulled them aside and said, hey, you guys got your time cut. Like they were going a million miles an hour. They were hitting their signature moves here at the beginning of the match or trying to. Rollins hit a series of three suicide dives on Priest that finally sent him over the announce desk, and Priest took a huge bump over the desk to the floor. Rollins at one point hit a buckle bomb. Priest responded with a sit-out power bomb. The champion looked to have him in position for a South of Heaven chokeslam. But Rollins reversed out of it. He landed a stomp on Priest for a close near fall. It was the safest stomp that you will ever see. It didn't look great, but man, it was as safe of a curb stomp as you will ever see. Priest recovered, then he planted Rollins with a razor's edge for a near fall of his own. So Rollins, in a lot of his matches, he has the superplex into the immediate Falcon Arrow, right? He does the Falcon Arrow superplex combo pretty much every match that he has. So he hits the superplex. He takes Damian Priest up and down for the Falcon Arrow. He's never won a match that I can recall with this combination. Maybe there was a match I'm forgetting. But generally speaking, it's like Sami Zayn with the Blue Thunder Bomb, right? He's technically won maybe a match or two with it. I kind of wish it would be his finish. But by and large, as great as the move is, he never fucking wins with it. So nobody was expecting this to be the finish of the match. But the referee counts one, the referee counts two, and there's no kick out from Damian Priest, and the referee, Rod Zapata, he holds up his count. So now everybody in the building is confused by this. I'm confused by this. Seth Rollins is confused by this. The referee, I'm sure, is confused by this, but he held up his count. Rollins couldn't believe it. Then, Drew McIntyre's music hits. And it seemed to me like what happened here, because there were some people in the chat I saw who said that maybe Priest got his bell rung, maybe he was concussed, or he took a hard shot to the head. He didn't take a hard shot to the head. Damian Priest was fine. In fact, Damian Priest on this non-pinfall here, you could see him talking to Seth, probably trying to figure out like what the fuck is going on here, and probably also very pissed off about the situation. It seems to me that it was just a music miscue. It was nothing that these guys did wrong. Now you could say, oh, Priest should have gotten his shoulder up, or you know what? Maybe he should have, but he didn't, because that wasn't the spot. If the music was supposed to interrupt, which I think is what was supposed to happen, I think they were supposed to play Drew's music. They were late. I mean, they were really late. It wasn't just like 2 or 3 seconds off. Like, it took another 10 to 15 seconds before we finally heard McIntyre's music. So I don't know what the fuck happened here. But I can only assume it was a miscue with the music, and they were just late. And somebody's going to get chewed out for it, but they were just late to the call. But again, he definitely looked angry when the match was over, Priest did. So Seth Rollins should have won the world title here. But I guess, unfortunately for him, the referee got a little dirt in his eye, I guess. I don't know. He certainly has a case on Raw Monday night if he wants to come out and plead his case and say, hey, I got screwed. It was the Seth Rollins screw job here at Money in the Bank. But Drew's music finally hits. He hits the ring. He cashes in. They ring the bell after Samantha Irvin makes her announcement that this will now be a triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Ding, ding, ding. And once the bell rings, that's it. It's official. There's no turning back. So now we have ourselves a triple threat match. McIntyre drops Rollins with a Future Shock DDT. Now he's sizing him up for the Claymore kick. Priest intercepted with a clothesline, but then he got taken down by a kick that barely grazed him. McIntyre wanted to finish Priest off when CM Punk runs in and he attacks Drew McIntyre from behind. Huge roar from the crowd. Punk assaults McIntyre outside the ring with a steel chair. He throws McIntyre into the timekeeper's area. McIntyre gives him his back, and he smashes him about 3 or 4 times across the back with the steel chair. So now Punk looks over at the World Heavyweight title. What they do now for these championship matches, they have that, like a podium. It's, what the hell do they call it? Whatever. Like a little podium, and they put the title on top of it. Whatever title it may be. So he's staring at it. He grabs the World Heavyweight title. He climbs the steps onto the apron. McIntyre now is in the ring. And Punk runs the length of the apron with the title. And he whacks McIntyre in the head with the world title. Punk then goes and sits cross-legged on top of the announce desk. And Damian Priest gets back up to his feet. He catches McIntyre with the South of Heaven chokeslam, and he pins him to retain the World Heavyweight title. After the match, Rollins is very upset about this, and he's yelling at CM Punk about getting involved in his business. Corey Graves now is trying to hold back Seth Rollins the way he was at Survivor Series last year when Rollins threw that fit. You know, when he saw Punk and he had to be restrained. So Corey Graves is trying to restrain him and to calm him down. So per the rules of this match, Seth Rollins now, he can never again challenge for the World Heavyweight title so long as Damian Priest is the champion. He will not have to wait very long. Give it a few weeks. Seth Rollins will once again be eligible to wrestle for the World Heavyweight title. Miscue aside, and it was a big one. I'm not denying that it was a major fuck up there, whoever's fault it was. Miscue aside, it wasn't their fault. I thought that the actual match before the cash-in, up to the cash-in, was really good. They had a really good match. If there was any ring rust on the part of Rollins, there certainly wasn't any that he showed me. But this played out exactly the way that I told you it would. I told you, Drew McIntyre is going to win Money in the Bank. He says he's going to cash in that night. That's exactly what he's going to do. And not only is he going to cash in, I told you, he's going to cash in during the match. Both men are down. He's going to cash in. They're going to make it a triple threat match. CM Punk is going to fuck this man over again. And Damian Priest, for the second time in as many months after the Clash of the Castle, he's going to do it again here. And he's going to pin Drew McIntyre. They're going to spare Seth from taking the direct loss. And Damian Priest is going to go to SummerSlam and challenge Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship. And 2AT, that is exactly how it played out here. This is all going to lead This is all going to lead now to the big match at SummerSlam. And I know a lot of people are going to be very upset. I've already seen it. Why would they waste the Money in the Bank briefcase in this way? Why would you have Drew McIntyre win the case, turn right around, and have a failed cash-in on the same night? You've now burned through a briefcase that you can use for the rest of the year. Why would you do that? I am of the opinion that Money in the Bank is a tired concept. I think they should give it a rest. It still is a very popular gimmick, though. They do big business with these shows, so I understand why they do it. I think Money in the Bank has jumped the shark. I think it jumped the shark a long time ago. And if it were up to me, I would give it a break for a while. So I don't really care much to begin with for the Money in the Bank briefcase. So that's the perspective that I'm coming at it from. You may feel differently. And we have another briefcase with the women that they can certainly use for however many weeks or months they want to use that for. I did not have an issue with them doing this because it is all going to lead now to a major match between CM Punk and Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam. And it feeds into that story perfectly, and it almost had to happen, and here's why. You saw the reaction when the match was over from Seth Rollins. He was getting up awfully close to CM Punk. He is no fan of CM Punk. The match we were going to get at WrestleMania this year, had he not gotten injured, was CM Punk and Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight title. Okay, that was confirmed in the WrestleMania documentary, but we already knew that anyway. It didn't happen. They're going to revisit Punk and Rollins at some point. I don't know if it's going to be in these next few months. I don't know if they're going to hold off until WrestleMania next year. But you saw the reaction from Seth Rollins out there. I floated a little bit of news that I had come across actually a few weeks ago. But I told you guys on the SmackDown review last night something that I had heard as far as what the plan was, at least as of several weeks ago, for Seth Rollins at SummerSlam. And it came from somebody who, you know, I trust the source and that it was accurate at the time. Of course, things could have changed. But I said the plan was, as it was relayed to me, that Drew McIntyre and CM Punk would wrestle at SummerSlam with Seth Rollins as the special guest referee. It's entirely possible that Rollins was penciled in as the referee because they did not know if he was going to be ready to be cleared for an actual match. But now he's wrestling. Because when I heard the news, I was very surprised. I said, referee? Especially if he's back wrestling, why would you not have him wrestle? So maybe it ends up being a triple threat match. That's also very possible, because honestly, I don't know what the fuck else you do with Seth Rollins at SummerSlam if he's not going to be involved in this. What else do you do with him? I don't know. I honestly don't know. If they're going to keep Braun Breaker in the Intercontinental title picture, then he's occupied. Chad Gable, you've got him. It looks like he's going to be occupied with the Wyatt Six. Everybody seems to be accounted for, except Rollins, who is one of the biggest stars on the brand. Based on what they did here at the end of this match, it just reinforces what I heard about him being involved in this. Now, whether that's as a referee or they turn it into a three-way, we'll find out probably on TV this week. I think it'll become, pretty obvious. But he may well end up being the special guest referee and not wrestling at SummerSlam. It seems like he is going to have some kind of involvement in this. If he does, that's another reason why they did what they did tonight, and it had to be done that way. There had to be a reason why Rollins would be inserted into a program that really doesn't need him. Rollins is not needed in this. The feud is Punk and McIntyre. I almost don't want anybody else involved in this because there's really no need for it. But if Rollins is going to be involved in some way, if he's going to be an enforcer or referee or whatever it ends up being, he had to come out of this tonight feeling like Punk also fucked him over. See, he was very angry at him. He should be angry at McIntyre, too, because McIntyre is the one who came out and cashed in. Rollins now has a reason to be upset with both of them. How do you explain that if McIntyre doesn't cash in this match? So to get to where it looks like they're going, it had to go down like this. I know people are going to be upset, but that's the way it is. This is the story they're telling. This is the story that I figured they were telling. It seemed like they were going in this direction. It just makes things that much more heated now between Punk and McIntyre going into this SummerSlam match. Drew, I mean, I said after the show, he was a lunatic. He put his hands on Adam Pearce. He had to be restrained by Wade Barrett when the show was over. He has gone off the deep end now. There's no turning back. That's it. It's time to do the match. I'm not going through this anymore. It's you and me one-on-one at SummerSlam. This man now has been screwed out of the World Heavyweight Championship three times. Three times in less than 6 months. WrestleMania, Clash at the Castle, Money in the Bank. He's going to fucking murder this man. So I don't have an issue with what they did. I'm not upset that they blew through the briefcase. And I really enjoyed the match that Priest and Rollins were having. So I liked most everything about this. I just, you know, it's unfortunate the execution of the McIntyre cash-in with the botch pin there. That was pretty bad, but I liked everything else about this. One other thing I will point out to you, actually two things, and then we'll move on to the next match here. Number one, did you notice the way that Michael Cole was talking about CM Punk when Punk did what he did and then he sat cross-legged on the announce desk and Cole is yelling at him, Phil, he's calling him Phil. You know shit's gotten real when he goes by his shoot name. And he's saying, Phil, what are you doing, Phil? What are you doing? It makes me think, it makes me wonder if maybe the end result of all this, when all is said and done in these next few months, makes me wonder if the idea is maybe for CM Punk to be a heel when this whole thing is over with. Maybe the idea at the very end is that Punk is the one who turns heel at the end. Because now it just feels like he's piling on. Of course, he got murdered on SmackDown a few weeks ago, so he was well within his rights to do what he did. But now he's pissed off McIntyre, he's pissed off Seth Rollins, who's a fan favorite, and now he feels like he was screwed over. Maybe there is something to this notion that Punk may go heel in the next few months. I still don't see it. It seems a little more plausible to me now than maybe it did 24 hours ago, but it's still hard for me to believe they would turn him this soon when he's still this popular. And what's not going to be popular with a lot of people is Priest and Gunther is your World Heavyweight title match at SummerSlam. I know it doesn't have the marquee value that Rollins and Gunther would have had, but Finn Balor, I'm sure, is going to factor into that in some way. There's another story with the Judgment Day that's at play here that will play itself out. But you can get that title ready. You can get that championship belt ready. The King of the Ring is going to take his throne at SummerSlam, or certainly no later than Berlin. I don't think there's any way that we get out of the month of August without Gunther being the World Heavyweight Champion. Let's put it that way. But now we know what our title match is going to be. We had the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match with Io Sky, Zoe Stark, Chelsea Green, Lyra Valkyria, Chelsea Green! See, that's why Samantha Irvin has her job and I have mine. Chelsea Green, Lyra Valkyria, Bird Girl. You notice Corey Graves on commentary basically called her Bird Girl, because that's what she is. She's Bird Girl. Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany and Chelsea, the funniest thing to me about this entire thing, Tiffany Stratton and Chelsea Green were the two biggest baby faces in this match, and they're both heels. But here in Canada, easily the two biggest baby faces in this match. And they played up the idea that Chelsea has a fear of heights. And she really didn't want to climb the ladders at the beginning of this match. She was actively avoiding climbing any of the ladders. Now, it's not that I don't worry when the men are out there doing crazy shit. I do. They do a lot of crazy stuff. And I even said this when I was talking about the TNT title ladder match at Forbidden Door last weekend. They're doing all kinds of wacky, crazy spots and dives and shit. And you just kind of get numb to it, but they just keep upping the danger level, right? And I'm always watching, and I'm like wincing and hoping that they're not, you know, killing each other or breaking their fucking necks out there. So it's not that I don't think that way when it comes to the men's matches. But there's just something about these women's matches. I'm holding my breath every single time. I'm watching them out there on these ladders and throwing these ladders around and landing on these ladders. And I'm just sitting here holding my breath. And clearly I'm not the only one, because on commentary, on the show, throughout this entire match, you heard the exact same concerns from Michael Cole and Corey Graves. At various points, they were openly fearing for the safety of every single woman in this match as the match progressed. So I know I'm not the only one. There was one point early on, Lyra, it was like in the first 3 minutes of the match, Lyra Valkyria went to go give Io Sky a back body drop, and it was going to be a back body drop onto a ladder that was propped up in the corner. So she went to go give her a back body drop, but she didn't get her all the way over. And Io landed very awkwardly. They kind of landed on top of each other, and then the ladder fell on them. And that was to start the match. And I'm like, oh my God. Thankfully, she was okay. There was another point where Zoe Stark did this wacky, I don't even know what it is. I see her do it in her matches. I don't know what she calls it, but it's this wacky move off the ropes. It might have been Lyra who was laid out on a ladder, and she's on the apron, and Zoe kind of dives into this like twisting dive into the ring. Almost completely missed Lyra and landed head first on the edge of the ladder with her own skull. What is going on here? So those are just two examples. The first few minutes of this match were very rough. Very rough. By the end of this, they won me over. And everybody else. Certainly in the building, people reacted to it major. I mean, the announcers were just, they were gushing over this. There was one spot, there was a tarantula German suplex in the ladder by Lyra. She dumped Io all the way down to the mat. That was crazy. Right on the back of her neck. Tiffany Stratton and Zoe Stark, they had a standoff at one point that got interrupted by Naomi, who tried to scale the two ladders that were in the ring, but she was stopped by Stratton and Stark. And so with the ladders split, she had one leg on one rung of one ladder, one leg on one rung of a second ladder. And I mean, she does the splits in her matches, so she's a very flexible woman. The problem is you could see one of the ladders was like this close to tipping over. And she was trying very hard to keep her balance. But somehow, while she was in that position, she grabbed, I forgot, it might have been Zoe. But she gave her a split-legged, oh no, it was Tiffany. She gave Tiffany a split-legged DDT from that position, which actually looked very impressive. So then Naomi went outside. She grabbed some tables from underneath the ring, but she got thrown into the steel steps by Chelsea, who got some help from Tiffany in setting up some tables out on the floor. We'll come back to those in a little bit. So then in the ring, they set up a ladder bridge. Lyra made a play for the briefcase. Zoe broke it up and then dumped her onto one of the ladder bridges back first, and she bounces off. Corey Graves at this point said that it's becoming uncomfortable. Becoming? Becoming? What have you been watching? It was uncomfortable from the moment the bell rang. It's becoming uncomfortable, he says. Michael Cole said he felt sick for enjoying it. So Naomi went for the briefcase. Chelsea pulled her down. Naomi and Chelsea, they both ended up on one of the ladder bridges. And Chelsea, it looked like she was going to go for the unprettier. But whatever, I don't know what she did, but she basically kind of, she dove off and she slammed Naomi basically down on the ladder. Whatever it was effective. Zoe got both hands on the briefcase and then she had to slow herself down. I mean, she had the carabiner and she had the hook like half open and she had to stop herself, because she's not supposed to win the match. So she has both hands on the briefcase. Io cuts her off. Now they're fighting on top of the ladder. Zoe sets up for a suplex. Io stuffs it. Io then places Zoe on her shoulder, and she jumps off the ladder and slams Zoe down onto the ladder. It looked like she was giving this woman a tombstone pile driver on this ladder. She may well have, because Zoe took a very nasty landing on top of this ladder. I thought Zoe broke her fucking neck on this landing. And you remember in NXT, Adrian Neville, right? Pac. He had a match. I want to say it was a singles match with Tyler Breeze once, but it wasn't just in that match. He has a very special way of selling a DDT that I love. So he would take a DDT, and then he would pop right back up, but like in one motion, and then basically do like a face plant. Like, it looks great. That's kind of how Zoe sold this. She got dropped on this ladder bridge. She kind of rolled off, and she just did that roll over and just pff, right down. Io sold it great too, because Io also took, you know, a good brunt of that bump, and she's like on her knees with her body's all the way back, and she's in agonizing pain. It was just a very hellacious spot to watch. Chelsea Green dumps Io to ringside, and then she is ready to climb the ladder. And the fans here in Toronto are rooting for her big time. They wanted a fellow Canuck, right? Doesn't matter that they're in Toronto and she's from, where is she from? Ottawa, I think she might be from. It doesn't matter. She's got that Canadian blood in her, right? You got to support your people. So she goes to climb the ladder, got her hands on the carabiner. Tiffany Stratton, though, cuts her off and pushes the ladder over. And Chelsea Green took this hellacious fall off the ladder, all the way out of the ring, over the top rope, crashes down through the two tables that her and Tiffany had set up on the outside only minutes earlier. And, I mean, she just crashed through those tables. She landed perfectly. But that was a hell of a bump for her to take. And with that, Tiffany Stratton was all by herself. Everybody else was killed off. And Tiffany Stratton took her sweet time, but she eventually unhooked the briefcase to win Money in the Bank. Holy shit. This match. I mean, I ran the gamut of emotions watching this match, from disgust at times to fear, to excitement, to laughter for some of the spots, especially some of the stuff Chelsea was doing, to fear again. Fear was kind of the dominant emotion that I had watching this match. I kind of feel like quoting A Tale of Two Cities is very appropriate to describe this match. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And I really feel like that's a very apropos description for what we saw here in this match. It turned out to be a very entertaining car crash, but it was not without its scary moments. I did enjoy it, you know, when it was over, and it got a standing ovation from everybody in the building. The fans loved it. They came up with some pretty innovative, very dangerous, of course, but pretty innovative stuff, especially later on in the match. I wish that they wouldn't do half the shit that they do, but you're never going to, I mean, you put them in a Money in the Bank ladder match. You're never going to get them to do anything else but crazy, stupid stunts. I mean, that's what these matches are all about. So I enjoyed it for what it was. I thought it definitely got better in the second half. It was definitely the bigger spectacle of the two Money in the Bank ladder matches this year. The women's match definitely topped the men's match in that regard. I didn't feel this way when the men's match was over. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but if they wanted to make you feel something, then they definitely achieved their goal. And it was the correct outcome. You know, and there were some people who thought maybe I was off with the predictions because I had two heels winning. You know, because I picked Drew in the men's match and Tiffany in the women's match. So would they really have two heels go over? The answer is yes. Yes, they would. But in this case, it was definitely the correct outcome. Tiffany Stratton is a megastar in the making. Just listen to the reactions that this woman gets. She has not been on the main roster for even a full year. She was getting reactions like this in Australia at Money in the Bank or at Elimination Chamber. That was in February. Okay, I mean, even she was shocked by that. She was getting tippy time chants. They were cheering for her. This woman was a star from day one. She's only getting better as time goes on. Now she's got the briefcase. And a very interesting statistic in the history of women's Money in the Bank ladder matches, a 100% success rate on cash-ins. Every single woman who has cashed in Money in the Bank has gone on to become a women's champion. I would hope Tiffany Stratton will not be the first to fail. Whether she fails or not, this woman's going to be defending titles and winning titles at WrestleMania. This woman can very well headline night one of a WrestleMania one year. We can get Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton one year in a WrestleMania main event. I could see that. So this woman is going places, but now she's got the briefcase. We'll see how that factors into SummerSlam next month, because Tiffany has been very friendly with Nia Jax over the last month. We even saw it on TV this week. And Nia Jax, of course, is challenging Bayley for the women's world title, the WWE women's title, at SummerSlam. Is Tiffany going to factor into that in some way? Is she being very nice to Nia, and then in the end she cashes in on Nia, let's say if Nia wins? Or maybe Nia doesn't win, but she cashes in at SummerSlam on a very tired, very injured Bayley. And Tiffany Stratton, she may not wait more than a few weeks to cash in Money in the Bank. She could very well walk out of SummerSlam the women's world champion. It's possible. But definitely the right outcome to this match. Then we get to the main event on this show. That guy right there. There he is. Hey, Greg Miller, thank you for the sub. That guy right there was in the main event of this show. Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, whose mother is in the hospital, for those who don't know, fighting for her life. He revealed that in his promo on SmackDown last night. Rushed to the hospital on Monday morning, I believe it was, and has been there ever since up until SmackDown last night. He decided to work the show. He was there tonight. Obviously, all the best to the Steen family. They took on the Bloodline, Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Jacob Fatu, making his in-ring WWE debut. They kept Tonga Loa on the outside. You'll see why here in a little bit. We'll get to that. We want Roman chants right from the outset, followed by chants of fuck you, Solo. And I took that personally. I take great offense to that. It was going to be Cody and Solo starting out here, but then Solo tagged out to Tama Tonga. Jacob Fatu, let's skip to the good part here. Jacob Fatu tagged into the match. His first WWE match. Gets into the ring, and he is in the ring with Randy Orton. Randy Orton gives him a draping DDT, which is one of his signature maneuvers. He DDTs him. Of course, Randy Orton should know better. He should know that you don't drop a Samoan or a Tongan or I guess anybody from the islands on their head. That was kind of the wrestling trope for so many years. Apparently, he never learned that lesson. Jacob Fatu got right back up. He no-sold the draping DDT. Got right back up to his feet. Randy didn't know it, though. Randy turns and he drops down. He's going to start pounding the mat, right? Like he pounded ass for all those years in his youth. He starts pounding the mat. Then he realizes, oh, shit. This guy's on his feet, right? He's shocked. Crowd is shocked. Orton ends up getting dropped with a Samoan drop. I love that, by the way. I just love what they did there in that one. Everything they have done this far, so far, with Jacob Fatu has been spot on. Like, the way that you would want Triple H and the creative team to book this man and to present this man on television has been perfect so far. Hopefully it continues. But from the moment he debuted a few weeks ago, they had him lay out three of the biggest baby faces in the entire company, including the WWE champion, on night one. His second week, he got his own entrance, separate and apart from the rest of the Bloodline. And it was a pretty badass entrance. And now here in his first match, he's no-selling one of Randy Orton's signature maneuvers. So you want to portray him as this unstoppable force who's out of his mind. He's a savage and he can't be stopped and everyone's scared of him. And they've done a great job so far. They really have. So the heels isolated Kevin Owens for what felt like forever. It was a good amount of time. Owens was about to tag out. Tongaloa, though, pulled Randy Orton off the apron to prevent the tag. Cody and Solo both tagged in. Cody power slammed him, followed up with a disaster kick. Tama Tonga ran in. He took a Cody cutter. Cody clothesline fought two over the top rope to the floor. He hit Solo Sikoa with a suicide dive. He rushed back into the ring. He went for a suicide dive on Jacob Fatu, who got pushed out of the way by Tongaloa. Tongaloa took the bullet for Jacob Fatu. And, man, the thud that the back of this man's head made when it smacked the announce desk. Tongaloa, he got knocked loopy there for a second. You could hear the smack right up against the announce desk when he fell backwards. Fatu got drop-kicked, he got backdropped over the barricade by Cody. And so, in the process of being backdropped into the timekeeper's area, he took out the doctor. Now, I didn't realize that it was a female doctor. They showed a replay of it in slow-mo. He gets backdropped over, and his leg smacks this woman, I mean, right in the back of the head. Like, the fucking doctor is going to need a doctor after this. So she took, unintended, I'm sure, she took a hell of a bump here. I don't think I've ever seen that woman there before. Usually the ringside doctor, you can kind of identify them by their face. I've never seen this woman before. Hopefully she's okay. Back in the ring with Cody and Solo. Solo accidentally nails the referee. We got a ref bump. We got a ref bump. That means fuckery is afoot. So now, again, I'm thinking now, they're headlining the show with this match, and now we get a ref bump. Like, maybe Roman is there. I don't know. Maybe they boarded the private jet. Maybe something else. Maybe fucking Hikuleo is going to show up. I'm thinking something is about to happen here. There's just too many things going on to where they wouldn't do something, you would think. Cody hits a crossroads on Solo, but there's no referee. So Kevin Owens decides to go up to the top rope, and he hits a frog splash on Solo. Now Randy Orton rolls into the ring and drops Solo with an RKO. So the babyfaces brought Solo outside the ring. They were preparing to deliver the same Shield triple powerbomb that the Bloodline gave to Paul Heyman on the show last week. But Jacob Fatu broke things up. Fatu then came charging in towards the ring steps, and in doing so, the referee happened to roll outside, and he was standing up by the steps. He gets crushed up against the ring steps by Jacob Fatu, and now he's done for good. Now the referee has now been bumped twice, and so now he's really out. Then Kevin Owens comes from out of nowhere. He splashes Jacob Fatu through the announce desk, and they panned out a little bit to show the ringside area by the announcers, and it looks like a fucking bomb went off. Like, it is just carnage all over the place. So in the ring, Owens had Tama Tonga, and he set him up for a package pile driver. We haven't seen him do that in WWE. He went for a package pile driver. Here comes Tongaloa in his suit. He had one job. Now, to be fair, he did smack the back of his head against the announce desk, so maybe he was a little loopy. But he gets into the ring, and his one job was to deliver a low blow to Kevin Owens. And it looked like he did, but I guess Kevin Owens didn't feel it because he probably missed. I don't know how you miss a low blow, but Kevin Owens, the first time, he didn't react to it, so he had to stand there. He has this man in position for a package pile driver. Tongaloa has to go for a second low blow because he botched the first one. You had one job. Now you know why he was on the outside and he was not in this match. So finally, he low blows Kevin Owens to cut him off there. Randy Orton dropped Tongaloa with an RKO. He took that well. But then Randy Orton got taken out by a Samoan spike from Solo Sikoa. Cody Rhodes hits crossroads to Solo, but Jacob Fatu comes off the ropes with a Jeff Hardy whisper in the wind to take out Cody Rhodes. I bet you weren't expecting that. I'll bet you weren't expecting, well, if you know Jacob Fatu, you were. But if you weren't, I'll bet you weren't expecting him to hit a whisper in the wind. That's just a small little crumb of what this man can do. You haven't seen anything. If you're not familiar with Jacob Fatu's work, you haven't seen anything yet. He's holding back. So he followed that with an implant DDT. He goes and he rouses Solo back to his feet. Jacob holds Cody for him. Cody was defenseless at this point. And again, now I'm thinking, okay, someone's coming out. Something's about to go down. Something's going to happen. Nope. Then came the Samoan Spike. And down goes Cody Rhodes. It was like WrestleMania 39 all over again. Jacob Fatu goes outside. He throws the referee back in the ring, Jason Ayers. And Solo Sikoa pins the WWE champion. He pins Cody Rhodes to win the match for the Bloodline. Jacob then brought the Ula Fala to Solo in the ring, puts it around his neck, and the Bloodline stands tall to close out the show. So they did not, in fact, have anything big planned for the end of the show, unless you consider the fact that Solo Sikoa just pinned the WWE champion as being a big thing. And it is, but I think a lot of people are going to look at this finish and say, man, this show had a flat ending here, because they kind of set you up to think that something was going to go down and then really nothing happened. So I will give you that it was a flat ending. There's a flat ending to the show, but I didn't mind what they did, and I actually thought the match was a lot of fun. I thought it was a very good main event. I had a lot of fun with it. Crowd was, firmly behind the baby faces. They wanted to see the Bloodline go down, but you can't always get what you want. And if this is the direction for SummerSlam, then this is the way that they needed to do it. What did I say in my predictions? Not just that the Bloodline wins, but Solo Sikoa should pin Cody Rhodes. And the example I've given you guys is just one example. Jey Uso pinned Roman Reigns in Money in the Bank last year. Went on to SummerSlam to wrestle for the world title. But I go back to 1996. I was a wrestling fan back then, watching Shawn Michaels during his first run. He got pinned in a six-man tag the month before SummerSlam by Vader. And Vader went on to challenge him for the championship at SummerSlam the very next month. It's Wrestling 101. You may not like Solo Sikoa being in the main event of SummerSlam. I don't really love it either. I could think of five other people I'd much rather see Cody Rhodes in the ring with on that show, but for the story they're telling right now, it is the match that makes sense. They are trying with Solo Sikoa. Maybe not everybody is buying into it so far, but they are trying with Solo to really portray him as a main event leader of this faction, as the heir apparent to Roman Reigns, which is a role that for the longest time it felt like he was being groomed for. It's kind of funny, the last time that he picked up the Ula Fala, people went nuts for it. Remember that? There was that one SmackDown where the Ula Fala was in the ring and Roman was down in the corner and Solo's there, and he reaches down and picks it up, and everybody was like dying to see him put it on. And then he ended up just handing it to Roman Reigns. And here we are now. I don't know. What was that? That could be 2 years ago now. Year and a half ago. Here we are now. People are booing this man. They're definitely, the Bloodline is getting heat. They're hitting all the right notes. But it goes to SummerSlam. He's not going to win the WWE Championship. SummerSlam is where we get the return of Roman Reigns. That's going to blow the roof off the place. Although they're in a stadium, so I don't know if there is a roof or not in Cleveland. But if there was a roof, I'm sure they'll blow it off the minute they hit that first chord for Roman's theme song. What they did here makes sense. It might not have been the sexiest finish, but it makes sense. And it capped off what I thought overall was an excellent Money in the Bank. This there really were no weak spots on this show. You could look at some of the matches, and there were definitely some rough spots in some of the matches. But everything, and there's only five matches. These cards that Triple H does are very small. I would hope SummerSlam will have more than five matches, because it's SummerSlam. You got to do at least six. They had no women's titles defended on their show. Women's tag team titles, women's world title, WWE women's title. We had the women's world title defended on Raw Monday night. But that was surprising to me. They wouldn't at least... You have three titles. You can't fit one on the show. They have to correct that with SummerSlam. We already know Bayley is defending against Nia Jax, so we'll get that. But I really have no issues with any of the matches on this show. I thought from start to finish, top to bottom, it was very strong. And now we move ahead to the big show this summer. It's all building to SummerSlam. The card now coming into focus. Cody and Solo, Gunther and Damian Priest, McIntyre and Punk with a likely involvement in some way by Seth Rollins. Sami Zayn, we'll see. I'm leaning towards a fatal four-way for the IC title, but we'll see where that goes. Logan Paul, LA Knight, US title. Makes all the sense in the world to me. Rhea Ripley, I don't know if she's going to be back in time. I hope she is. The match is her and Liv Morgan. If she's not back in time, I don't know what you do with Liv. I mean, you could always have her defend, I guess, against the Bird Girl. Could always do that. And who does that leave? You want to have at least one tag team title match, I would think, on that show. But that's really, those are the key matches on that card. You know, and that's a pretty strong card. Maybe not the most exciting world title matches, but I think if people know that Roman is going to be there, and you've got the first Punk and McIntyre match, those two things alone, I think, make SummerSlam a must-see show. See what you thought of Money in the Bank. This is the poll as it went up about 2 hours ago. 64% of you on Twitter have given this show a thumbs up. This is with 2,000 votes plus in so far. 64% thumbs up, 23% thumbs in the middle, and 12.7% thumbs down for Money in the Bank. You can go vote at Solomonster on Twitter. And let me know what you thought of the show. Look at that scary SOB right there. 64% wrong. It says Spare Draft. Spare Draft, apparently not a fan of Money in the Bank. Let's get into your messages and find out if you guys are a fan of Money in the Bank. Owen Curtis, let me go back to some of the early ones here with Owen, who said, say what you want to about other possible opponents, but Cena versus Orton at WrestleMania 41 just makes sense. A true end of an era. It does. It does make a lot of sense. If that was to be his last match, then it would have to happen later in the year because he's wrestling the entire year. But that feels like a WrestleMania match to me. I just feel like you got to get one singles match in with them at WrestleMania. Just crazy to me to think that they never had one. The million fucking matches they had. And Owen says, unless they do it again in Saudi in 10 years. Now, Cena made it pretty clear he's done after next year. Matthew with the five Canadian. Show has been electric. Do you see a triple threat with Drew, Punk, and Seth for SummerSlam? Can't wait for the sound off. It's either that or what I told you guys last night, which is that Rollins could end up being the referee. But it would have to be one or the other. Prince Vegeta says, not every main event match needs a referee bump. It feels like there's more ref bumps in the Triple H era than the Jeff Jarrett era in TNA. Well, I wouldn't go that far. Let's not get carried away now. James, 1992, with the 999. The last match felt like a real classic, old school wrestling match for the most part, and Jacob made it feel that way, in my opinion. I enjoyed the main event. Again, I know the finish and nothing happening there at the end kind of felt flat, but I thought the match itself was actually really great. So you get no argument out of me. Let's see if there's any other early ones I missed before we get to the list here. Don't want to miss anybody. Oh boy, we got a whole bunch of them here. All right, here we go. Let's pick up with Piscopo. Not Piscopo.
I am the learning tree.
Oh, no.
Thanks, guys.
I'd rather watch a Joe Piscopo movie. Fucking learning tree. It's not Piscopo. It's Pisco. 95. Hey, Solo. Hope you're doing okay. Very disappointed with this PLE. The worst part is the card for SummerSlam so far looks dull. Can't fathom a world where Cody versus Solo for the main event is a hot match. Triple H did not cook tonight. See, That's so weird. I thought this was an excellent show. I actually thought this was a great show. And again, Cody and Solo, yes. That's not the SummerSlam main event that I want. But it's all about how that show is going to end. And I assure you, that show is not going to end with Cody Rhodes just beating Solo and going off the air. They're setting up for something big on that show. Jeremy, if you want specific super chats, check the description down below. They're all listed there. Clamp God, get a medic for the medic. Yeah, really. I mean, I'm telling you, man, that doctor, she took a hell of a bump. Hype Man Slimy, notice green shirt guy changed his color to white. Yes, because I am wearing green tonight. And like Taz, I've trademarked it and nobody else can wear the color green. So I sent him a cease and desist. And I told him, fuck off, you can no longer wear green. I wear it now. You're looking at the new green man. Superman Bass Fisher, it's Tiffy time. That's right. Anderson Blitz, with Cena retiring in 2025, I hope he gets one last championship reign. I legitimately cried hearing my hero announcing the end of his story. Thank you, Cena. James says, leave a like. That's true. Definitely hit that like. If you want to do Be the Booker here in a little bit, make sure you hit that thumbs up. I don't know where we're at, but hopefully we are somewhere in the 700 and 800 range. I don't have it in front of me. Alex with the 22 says, Brother Solo, besides the biggest names like Roman, Cody, or CM Punk, what up-and-coming young talent would you like to see have matches with John Cena before he retires? There isn't any one talent I really want to see Cena in the ring with, as far as like the young crop. I think Cena and Braun Breaker, though, is probably going to happen next year. So I'll say Cena and Braun would be my choice. SMG Kobe with the 1999. Punk could have screwed Drew during the ladder match and put the case on someone who could have used it. What's the point of the briefcase if they waste it the same night? I mean, look, I made my point earlier. We don't need the briefcase anymore. I'd get rid of the fucking thing if it were up to me. You're lucky they even have one anymore. The point of the briefcase was exactly what they did tonight. The point was to do the failed cash-in. That was the point. Let's game this out, okay? Because I know people are very hung up on this whole briefcase thing. So let's think about this. If McIntyre doesn't win the briefcase, right? Let's say Punk interferes in the ladder match. McIntyre doesn't win the briefcase, right? LA Knight wins the briefcase. We know LA Knight is going to be challenging for the United States Championship. So he doesn't need the briefcase at this time. I wanted him to win last year. He didn't win. He doesn't need it right now. He's got a different story. He's going some other direction. Okay? Jey Uso. Jey Uso winning the briefcase? Yeah, I could have seen that. And Jey Uso is very popular. Is Jey Uso going to cash in to win the World Heavyweight title? I don't see him winning the World Heavyweight title. Especially not if Gunther wins the title next month. He ain't getting his hands on that World Heavyweight title. So what's he going to do? He's going to cash in for the WWE title? Who's he going to cash in on? Cody Rhodes? It doesn't really work. There is no obvious cash in for Jay. I mean, you could have him carry it for a year, I guess. Maybe in 9 months, there'll be an opportunity for him to cash in. But it doesn't even really work for him. Chad Gable is the only other one I would have really even considered putting the briefcase on. Chad, yes, you could come up with a potential world heavyweight title scenario for him. Maybe you could even use it where he uses it to cash in for the Intercontinental title, like Austin Theory challenged for the U.S. title. Only this time he actually wins it. But the chances of them using the briefcase to cash in for a lesser title, I don't think that was going to happen. So that leaves you with Andrade. I mean, give me a fucking break. And Carmelo Hayes. All right, so Carmelo Hayes carries the briefcase around for 6 months. And then probably cashes in and fails. Like, it wasn't like there was another really obvious, immediate great option to carry the briefcase around. Well, yeah, Damian Priest carried the briefcase around for almost the full year. All right, like 9 months. We don't need the Money in the Bank winner every year to carry the briefcase for 9 fucking months. And there was nobody else where an immediate cash-in in the next month or two really would have made a whole lot of sense. Did we really need the Money in the Bank briefcase to go to somebody else this year with that lineup? I don't think so. I don't think we did. But Kobe also says, Fatu stole the show. He's a mix of Jeff Hardy and Umaga. Yeah, I've seen comparisons made. What was the comparison that somebody else made? Was he was a mix of like Will Ospreay and Will Ospreay. Maybe he was like a mix of Will Ospreay and some brawler. I forgot who it was. It was a good comparison though. It's a mix of power and a mix also of great agility. He can do things in the ring that you wouldn't expect him to be able to do. And he was doing that when he was probably 30 or 40 pounds heavier than he is now. Now he's shed weight. He's in the best condition I've ever seen him in. Probably the best condition he's ever been in his entire career. So if he was doing that stuff before, imagine what he could do now. He brings all of these qualities together. Very unique in that way. Oz and Glorious, my boy Oz. Thank you for the 12. It says, MJF watches your streams confirmed. He borrowed my previous Daniel Garcia is a Make-A-Wish Kid super chat in his promo on Collision tonight. Also, fuck the Fed. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Oz. Forgot. Now I have to go back and I have to check out Collision before I record tomorrow. Slipper House. It's only right that Baron Corbin also retires John Cena. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. Don't even say it. Hype Man Slimy. When do you want to retire, Solo? When do I want to retire? I've already got my retirement planned out for 2031, so we got a ways before then. Rojo Bear, John Cena's final opponent should be Randy Orton. And it may well be. Base Beerus, loving this Money in the Bank stream and yellow graphic and frame. Yeah, they had the yellow color scheme this year, and so I wanted to replicate it. I like it. It's different. It's not the usual dark colors. Hope you enjoy it. I did it all myself. Elijah Davis with the 999. Hey, Brother Solo, been listening since the TV Tracks days and finally decided to say hello. Well, hello, Elijah. How are you? Thanks for getting me back into wrestling, and also thanks for getting me through my last deployment. Take care. Well, you're very welcome, Elijah. You're always welcome here on these streams, and I thank you for the support. Thank you very much. And thank you to the 1900 still hanging with me here at almost 1 in the morning. You guys are awesome. Jerome Eugenio, I know eventually Bron Breakker will win the IC title, but having him lose cleanly so early in his main roster run just doesn't feel right. Jerome, it's fine. Honestly, it's fine. People make too big of a deal about it. When you have somebody like Sami Zayn, who's a big star in this company, And he beats Bron Breakker in a highly competitive match where Bron went in there and he looked like a killer. And he looked impressive. It's not a big deal. It's really not. You got to look at it from a different perspective, man. Not everybody is going to go undefeated until they win their first title. A lot of people do. Not everybody has to. Base Beerus, I thought Naomi was getting the shattered dreams. That's what I thought. Then I realized it probably would have no effect, so. I mean, maybe it would. I'm the wrong person to be asking, I guess, but. Insecure Skeletor. Sounds like Skeletor from Robot Chicken. Rollins will cost Punk his return match with Drew. What else would Rollins do at SummerSlam since you can't challenge Priest for the title? I already told you. He could be the guest referee or the guest enforcer. Jonathan Bordeaux. Seth pinned Priest. That was a botch. Yep, he was a music botch. Seth Rollins has a legitimate claim to the World Heavyweight title, but he ain't going to be wrestling for it at SummerSlam. Actually, he's not going to be wrestling for it at all because he didn't win. Barry MK, there's been 3 bad blood shows and they all had a Hell in a Cell match. They better keep that up. They're going to have a Hell in a Cell match. It's the entire reason why they're bringing it back. They're paying homage to the very first Hell in a Cell in 1997. You will have a Hell in a Cell match. It will involve Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. The Carlosis need to change the name of the match to Botches in the Bank. Happy there appears to be no injuries, though. Well, there's always a risk involved when you do stupid shit off of ladders and onto ladders and ladder bridges. Every time I hear that sound, every time I hear that steel sound when they throw the ladder at somebody or they get slammed on it, I cringe. Drew Johnson, look at Drew. This was 2 hours ago, but I don't know if Drew is still with us. Drew, I am saluting you. I hope you are still with us, Drew. I really hope Drew is still hanging around.
Oh, my God, a super chat bomb.
He dropped a bomb.
That's a bigger bomb than the New York Mets.
He dropped a bomb on me. Acknowledge me, Solomonster. HBK is the GOAT. So saith Drew Johnson. I think I know what your favorite Hell in a Cell match is. It's probably mine. The very first one. Very first Bad Blood. Hype Man Slimy. Settle a bet. What is your favorite Super Chat? It's the Cody Bomb. Of course, it's the highest one. Did you think I was going to say something else? RB65, Bad Blood? Oh, sweet Bad Blood, it sings to me. Enough to make a man sick. RB, thank you. James, 1992, type tie briefcase says Voight, so what? Is that supposed to say the briefcase? Did the briefcase say Vought on it? I didn't think the briefcase itself had actual branding on it, but maybe it did. I thought it was just the piece that it was hooked to. Kevin Dunn's Beaver. Taylor Swift won a Super Bowl and soon a WWE title. Thank you, Kevin Dunn's Beaver. So it did have branding on it? All right, well, you can add that to the list of all the other things I listed that have branding on it now. The briefcase hook, the mat, the turnbuckles, the posts, the apron, the announce desk. Sometimes they'll have it on the screens during the match. Xavier Walker, keep up the good work, Solo. I'm super excited. Bad Blood, poor Bad Blood. Been waiting on a PLE in Atlanta for a while. Cody and Metro booming. That promo was hard. Daniyasu, as someone who used to boo Cena, it sucks to see him go. Always respected the man and talent, was never a fan of the super booking. Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people had an issue with, because until they got Super Cena, you know, he was very popular before that, until people resented the fact that he was being shoved down their throat. Dom Joseph, favorite Cena moment? I mean, my favorite Cena moment was, if you count a match, it's the Money in the Bank match with CM Punk in 2011. I think that would count as a moment, would it not? Kobe, so does this mean Priest against Gunther at SummerSlam? That's exactly what it means. The Juliet, surprise Logan Paul didn't cost LA Knight Money in the Bank. I am very surprised about that. Devin from NJ 2000. Will Solo do the national anthem at a hog show? I don't know. You'll have to come to the hog show to find out. James 1992. Speaking of a hog show, look at that. Look at the timing of that. See, this is what you'll find at a hog show. Me doing a horrible dance with Prince Nana and Swerve Strickland. Funny enough, Swerve and Nana are coming back. They're at the next hog show, High Intensity. Our biggest show of the year, July 26th. Swerve and Prince Nana are back. Only this time, he is the AEW World Champion. He's going to bring the title with him. Maybe I could show him my improved dance moves. What do you think? James says, Solo, you're the man. Been listening since 2010. Holy shit. Everyone leave a like for the hard work. Appreciate you, my guy. Get me through my work landscaping at the graveyard I work at. That's an interesting job. Landscaping at the graveyard. So you literally are working the graveyard shift. James, man, thank you for sticking with me for so long. Alex with the 23, with a good segment of the fans already in their seats during the two-hour kickoff shows, do you think WWE should insert one or two low card matches to get more people on the card and get the crowd into the show? I think first of all, I think having a 2-hour pre-show and not one match is fucking ridiculous. So yes, if you insist on having a 2-hour pre-show, you need at least one match for the people in the building. But I don't think you need a 2-hour pre-show to begin. Is lint even a word? Of course lint is a word. Yeah. Like you have lint in your belly button. Ray Wrighton. What year did you think Money in the Bank jumped the shark? I don't know if it was a specific year, but I would say I've probably felt this way for at least 3 or 4 years now. It's not like it's some sudden thing. It just lost its appeal for me after a certain amount of time. And you know, you go with the same tired cash in, and because very few people actually call their shot in advance. So it's mostly the same kind of cash in. It just gets old. Lindt. Well, Morton is Swedish. Lindt, the chocolate company. That's not a Swedish company, is it? Because you have that Lindt also, although there's a D. I think it's L-I-N-D-T. Lindt chocolate is actually very good. I can't have it anymore, but it's actually very good. Bones Jones. Balor face turn and world title triple threat at SummerSlam. I don't see that at all. DEH Sires. Women's match started off rough, but man, the rest was awesome. It was anxiety filling, which I have not felt in a long time in a wrestling match. It was definitely anxiety-inducing. That is for sure. M. Mills with the $25 Brie mode. Thank you, M. Mills. Lindt is Swiss. See, so Morton, have you heard? You have to have heard of Lindt Chocolate Company. I mean, if you're Swedish, you can't tell me you don't know about Lindt. Milton Herrera Rimaldi. who dropped the big super chat last night, is back with a $36 drop. Just got back from the show. Hope you caught the Solo Fears Solo Monster sign on the hard cam during the main event. Great show overall. Women killed it. I did not. I will have to go back and check it out. And I haven't checked my tweets. If somebody took a screenshot of it, I was so into the match and taking my notes and my head was down for part of the time, so I didn't see it. But Milton, I got to thank you for representing the Sound Off in Toronto tonight in Money in the Bank and getting some FaceTime for the show. If anybody has a screenshot that you want to send me, send it over to me. Thank you, Milton. Rizzo with the 23. I just want to download this super chat when my boss wants to give me some crap to deal with. That's the off is the direction you can fuck super chat. I've got a few people myself who I'd like to tell that to. Hoffenheim, did you pin Cody Solo? I did. DEH says, give me Punk versus Cena on Raw's Netflix debut. And you know what? Not for nothing, that'd be fucking great. That would be great. I mean, that's a PLE match, but if Punk is involved in other feuds and stuff, you know, just to have a big attraction on that first Netflix show, that would be great if they did Punk and Cena on. Funny enough, the last match they had was on Raw. Ziggly Mustache, first PLE with my gold friend Matthew. Had a blast. Your gold friend? You have gold and silver friends? You rank them? Or do you mean good friend? What is going on with you people tonight? Ziggly Mustache, thank you, and I'm glad you enjoyed the show. It was a great show. I thought it was a great show. Demeter, oh no. Oh no. It's Demeter Bullion Trips. Is it okay if I call you Trips? With a $5 super chat, Demeter Bullion has made his way over from our TNT streams on Tuesday nights. He has arrived. Mac and Cheese is CM Punky and Solomonster Sokoa Dad. Triple H spits on Jamie Noble on the TV and watch Cops with a blunt in his lap and hands in his pants. I don't even know what to say to that. It's good to see you, Demeter. I'm sure we will be seeing you on Tuesday night on the other channel. It's good to have you. I'm going to try to decode this after and try to figure out exactly what is being said here. You lost me, though, at mac and cheese, I could tell you that. Rizzo with the 10, whether it's Tongaloa's fault or not, that's two botches now. He almost botched his debut, which again, it was loud in that building, so he may have missed his cue. You know what? That's right. He did. He botched his debut. I forgot about that. He botched his debut getting out from under the ring. I don't know, man. Look, G.O.D. together, they had a lot of success as a tag team in Japan. They won a lot of titles together. I think they're going to end up beating DIY and winning the tag titles on SmackDown soon. Whenever DIY, I mean, they just won them, but whenever they lose the belts, it's probably going to go to the bloodline. Tama Tonga had a singles run that actually was not bad. Tongaloa is not meant to have a singles run. And if you have seen his run in New Japan, I think you would understand that. He's better off in a tag team. But he's had a few rough nights. You can blame it on the loudness of the arena in France. You can blame tonight on, again, he smacked the back of his head on the announce desk at one point. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know. But yeah, he's had a few rough moments. Tyler Bouchard is a Sound of legend. Look at this guy. You are a legend, my friend. Thank you for being a channel member. Legend. That feeling when your name is Loa and you can't low blow. HBKC83, heard you mention Pac earlier. Who takes a better DDT between Pac and RVD? Pac. RVD takes a better pile driver. Hack takes a better DDT. Hoffenheim. My brother didn't believe me when I spoiled the ending that Solo will pin Cody to set up the SummerSlam main event. Well, that's because your brother doesn't listen to me. So you need to try to recruit him to start listening to the Sound Off and watching these streams. And then he'll be more educated. DEH says Rossi was sweating bullets with that EO and Zoe spot. Oh, you know what? Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. EO Sky is scheduled to wrestle in Japan for Marigold next Saturday. Rossi was, man, he had his fingers and toes crossed on that spot. That's right. EO Sky and AJ Styles are both wrestling in Japan for different promotions next weekend. We're getting AJ Styles against, oh gosh. Forgot who he's wrestling. Do you believe this? What is it, 1 o'clock in the morning? 1:03? Remind me who he's wrestling, for God's sakes. I forgot who it was. Oh, man. Having a senior moment. Mara Fuji, of course. Mara Fuji, the fuck is wrong with me? Nao Michi, Mara Fuji. And AJ Styles is happening next weekend. Oh, man. Ziggly Mustache. Got a kick out of some people in our section chanting, "This is awesome," followed by dog barks instead of claps during Breaker and Zayn. Yeah, they've been doing the dog bark since he debuted in NXT. $1. I'd rather see Jacob Fatu against Cody at SummerSlam. So would I. But that doesn't fit the story. Jacob Fatu is not the tribal chief. Solo Sikoa is. The Real CS, Punk versus Cena, Money in the Bank 2025 in Chicago. I like the idea of Punk and Cena on that first Netflix Raw. Old man Solomonster with his 40 years. I don't know, man. I stream so much. I have these brain farts sometimes where my brain locks for a second. Maybe I should run for president. What do you think? Hoffenheim, I was partying when I heard that Cena will retire. Damn, I nearly was emotional with tears. It's all right, brother. He's not going anywhere yet. He's got a whole year. He's going January through December. So you got John Cena for a while yet. Retro KOH. Some fans annoy me. Drew was the only correct Money in the Bank winner. And Solo pinning Cody is leading to something big. Some people will whine no matter what they do. Yeah, I mean, look, it was the endings that make the most sense for where they're going. The Mount Vernon Kid. Christopher Bennett. Hey, Solo, you're not alone. I'm tired of the Money in the Bank concept. Same old, same old. I was done with it when Kane cashed in on Rey Mysterio. I remember that. Was that 2009 or 2010? It was one of those two. Hoffenheim, I even spoilered for my bro that CM Punk will cost Drew the Money in the Bank cash-in. Jeremy Rose with the $8 super chat. Solid show tonight. Women Money in the Bank was awesome. Match of the night. The rest of the matches all very entertaining, despite obvious finishes to set up SummerSlam. Alex says, I know this is wishful thinking, but do you think there is a slight chance we get an OG Bloodline / Paul Heyman guys of Roman, Punk, Lesnar, and Usos against Bloodline 2.0 at War Games? No, that's not going to be the War Games match. But I did float that idea the other day. Like, how cool would it be if, like, one day we saw Roman, Punk, and Lesnar just standing there and they're ready to just go to war for Paul Heyman? But is that going to be a War Games match? No, it's not going to be a War Games match. Hoffenheim says Bad Blood main event Triple H against HBK was too long. Yeah, you know, I was never a huge fan of that. I really wasn't. Even the Last Man Standing match that they had at the Royal Rumble. Like, I enjoyed their TV match for the world title the month before a lot more than I did that. I just felt like some of their matches were too self-indulgent. Retro KOH, wasn't the stipulation that Rollins not getting another shot if Priest beat him? But he didn't. He beat Drew. Their singles match was this. I don't know if that was the stip or if it was just that if I don't win the title. I don't remember exactly how he worded it, but it doesn't matter. He's not getting a title shot until Priest loses the title. He's a babyface here. He's not going to try to worm his way out of it. Hoffenheim, again, for everybody, who is your favorite porn star? Well, that's for the chat. Have at it. Jeremy Rose, I'm definitely going to Bad Blood this year. Can't wait to see a Hell in a Cell match in person. Yeah, I think the only Hell in a Cell match I ever saw in person was the end of an era. WrestleMania 28 in Miami, Undertaker and Triple H. I think that may have been the only one. I'll tell you what, though, that near fall, if that isn't the greatest near fall sequence of all time, it's got to be top three. The super kick into the pedigree with the streak on the line. How is that not number one? As far as near falls, how is that not number one? Super Pony, what do you do with Randy and KO at SummerSlam? You could always feud them. Right? Their friendship can't last forever. Put them one-on-one. Tyler Bouchard with the $12. Only just realized the original Bad Blood was the only Bad Blood. Thought it was always called Bad Blood. WWE version of the Mandela Effect. Wait, what? The original Bad Blood was the only Bad Blood. Thought it was always called Bad... Yeah, it always had the two Ds, didn't it? I thought all the Bad Bloods they did had two Ds in the word bad. Actually, the first Bad Blood was technically an In Your House. I don't think they're calling this one In Your House. Brandon Vasquez with the $5 super chat. Should Drew versus Punk at SummerSlam be unsanctioned? With everything these two have done to each other, I don't think it should be a normal singles match. I agree. It should probably be an unsanctioned or a no-holds-barred match. But maybe they don't want to do a stipulation for the first match if they're going to do three of them. BW Rosas. Do you think we may get a triple threat Hell in a Cell with Punk, Drew, and Seth instead of just Punk and Drew? Also, Nia will keep an eye on Tiff. Yeah, she's going to have to. She's going to have to watch her like a hawk now that she's got that briefcase. No, I think Hell in a Cell should just be Drew and Punk. Maybe they'll do a great job in the next few months of building the story up to incorporate Seth in a way that is interesting to me, but I don't think it's needed. You know, the feud is Punk and Drew. I don't think we really need to work anybody else in there. Hoffenheim says Lint is Swiss, not Swedish. I like Swedish fish. Are they from Sweden? It's like, what's next to USA? USB. Anyway. Alex says, what are your thoughts on why Christopher Daniels never signed to WWE? I think that they probably thought he was too small. And Alex says, Brother Solo, have you ever thought of creating a greatest hits DVD of some of your famous and favorite sound-off clips and takes and selling them as a physical media? No. Physical media is all but dead. It would cost me more to make them than it would to sell them and make anything back from what I'm spending. It wouldn't make any sense. And I wouldn't sell it anyway. I'll put together a highlights video one year. I did that one year, actually. There was a year in review video I did. I think maybe at the end of 2020 I did it. It was so time-consuming. But I have clips from every year that I have been doing the video streams. So, I don't know if I'll ever use them or not, but I clip a lot of stuff, a lot of funny moments. Every now and then I look back on stuff from like 2020 and 2021. 10 years from now, I'll look back on this and I'll be reading a Demeter Bullion Super Chat, thinking to myself, what the fuck? Scratching my head, wondering what I've done with my life. Prince Vegeta, that Cody Bad Blood ad makes me think about that Stakeout episode of Seinfeld. Here's to feeling good all the time. Is that the scene where Newman was flossing his teeth in the car and then took the floss and put it on the dashboard? Jerry almost puked. Power Spying Games, another porn question. Oh boy. Well, it's after dark, so people get very excited. Or maybe just when they see me on screen. I don't know. I can't blame you. Mario DeRose, will you ever bring back Buy or Sell to the Sound Off? It never went away. I don't do them every week, but I think I just did a buy or sell last week. They never went away, Mario. They're still there. Morton says, why does Bret Hart dislike Triple H? I mean, it goes back to the screw job in Montreal. He's never thought very highly of Triple H. And Bleed Boston, who do you think will have the better career when all is said and done, Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn? Neither will ever be a top guy, but both careers have been excellent. Top guy, they've been a top guy for almost their entire run in WWE. I mean, not everybody can be the John Cena face of the company or the Roman Reigns face of the company, but Owens and Zayn have been top guys for years now. As far as who will have the better career, I think that they are so intertwined and their careers are so similar and have been so parallel to each other in many ways. It's hard to say that one will end up better than the other. I think they're both on the same track. But if I had to say that one will end up having more weight than the other, I probably would go Kevin Owens. But I think they're pretty even. And Vontel with the $4.99. What was worse this year? Jay and Jimmy's match at WrestleMania or Billy Gunn looking like 1997 Goldberg against Jay White? I'm going to go Jimmy and Jay, considering how much that match was built up. And it was a big match at WrestleMania and it shit the bed, as opposed to a random television match between Billy Gunn and Jay White. I would say Jimmy and Jay was far worse. And that, I believe, is all of your questions answered. We are approaching 900 likes. We're less than 10 likes away from 900. So we're not going to hit 1,000 here on the live portion, but it looks like we'll be able to hit 900. Raph, thank you for the $2. Is there a Be the Booker record or spreadsheet anywhere? There are a couple of people, fans of the show, who keep track of it. I don't. So if there is a record of it, I don't have it. But there, you know, if anyone's listening, if anybody maintains a record, let me know. And I'll pass it along to Raph. Thank you for the support. Let's go ahead and Be the Booker, because you guys earned it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Speaking of Jey Uso, there he is. There is Jey Uso. And here is Be the Booker. We did it last night. We're doing it again tonight. We'll probably do it on Monday night if you guys are out in full force with the likes. And then Wednesday, we can be doing a lot of Be the Booker. That's going to be up to you guys. This is a Money in the Bank edition of Be the Booker, and this is how we kick things off here. We kick things off with the Brothers of Destruction. Kane and The Undertaker are kicking us off here in Tag Team Be the Booker. It's going to be hard to mess this up. It's going to be the Brothers of Destruction against the Rhodes Scholars, the reigning WWE champion, Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow. This Cody kid, man, he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's going to get slaughtered here in this match. But we've got some star power here. So I will give that the belt. I wonder if Cody ever worked a match, his first run with The Undertaker at any point. I don't think he did. Like a TV match, maybe a house show match. I don't have any memory of that. Women's Be the Booker. We begin with, there's a sight for sore eyes. God, I miss this woman. Jamie Hayter, the former AEW Women's World Champion. It looks like we're going to have yet another Wembley show with no Jamie Hayter. For shame. Jamie Hayter is going to go one-on-one with who? With Julia Hart. Julia Hart out with an injury herself right now, but Julia Hart has improved quite a bit. She had actually a number of matches as TBS champion that I liked. So we booked ourselves, a Rampage or a Collision match. But I like it, so I give it the bell. And that brings us to our main event. Can we do it? Can we get a clean sweep? With an excellent Money in the Bank, can we have a clean sweep here and Be the Booker? Let's find out. We're going to kick things off with the American Badass, The Undertaker. We have now had two matches in the same episode of Be the Booker with two different versions of The Undertaker. So let's see who The Undertaker is going to be rolling down to the ring to step into the ring with. Pulling double duty is The Undertaker. That's right. It'll be The Undertaker against. Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, my God. The horror. The horror. We were this close to a clean sweep, and then Tyrus, a wild Tyrus, appeared out of nowhere. This man, the fact that this man was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion is such a fucking disgrace. It's just, I can't get over it. This is just wrong. This image, it's just wrong. Undertaker and Tyrus, though, would have been a mid-90s WWF match. Had he been around back in the mid-90s, that would have been a WrestleMania match. Think about that. We would have had Undertaker and Tyrus at a WrestleMania one year. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Of all the names I was hoping to land on, that was not the one. Should we pick a stipulation just for shits and giggles to see what kind of match that these two would have? I'm kind of morbidly curious now. I'm curious. What kind of a match would Undertaker and Tyrus have had? This I have to see. They would have had themselves a fight pit match. A fight to the death between The Undertaker and Tyrus. You think Tyrus would be able to climb up onto that platform there in the fight pit? Because I don't think so. I doubt that very seriously. Ah, man. Well, I was hoping to give you a better main event. But that's how it goes sometimes. Undertaker is beating his ass. Watch for the pure strikes. The best pure striker in WWE. I always used to love it when Michael Cole would talk about the pounding ground as opposed to the ground and pound. It's the pounding ground. We have some more super chats here coming in late. We got Cecil Robinson. Cecil, thank you for the $4.99. Says Elsa Jean, being with a woman like her is like having Thanksgiving every day. If you know, you know. Elsa Jean. Apparently he's very fond of Elsa Jean. He has an emoji of some corn here. I don't know what you're saying, Cecil. I don't know if Cecil eats corn the long way. I'm not sure what that means, but Cecil, thank you for the $4.99. We've got Azumarill. Been following for over a decade. I thought that was the letter I after that. I started reading a sentence that wasn't there. Been following for over a decade. Keep doing you. In your opinion, during your time watching WWE, what is better now and what was better back then? Don't Google it. I won't. My chat needs Jesus. They need something. I think they need to be medicated. That's what I think. So what do I like then? What do I like now? There's a lot of things I like. I mean, we can go really way back, like 30 years ago. I really liked the way they used to shoot promos pre and post match in the backstage area with the one static camera shot. And then sometimes they would switch to like a zoomed in view.
I'm the learning tree.
This is one of the things that about wrestling today is the learning tree. I could tell you that. We didn't have a learning tree 30 years ago in wrestling. If there was a learning tree back then, I assure you that they would have hazed the shit out of it. They would have bullied that learning tree right out of the business. So yeah, I mean, that's one example of something I used to enjoy back then. And yeah, we used to have the squash matches on the syndicated shows to build up a new guy and to build up their moves. We don't really have that anymore. As far as what I like today, I mean, the storytelling has been top notch, you know, more recently in WWE. I think it's been great. I think that the athleticism of the wrestlers is far superior to the way it used to be. I think that there's certainly a lot more variety in the product today than there was back, like way back then. I think that's a good thing to have variety. We went through a period in wrestling in WWE where everybody kind of looked the same. You know, they had to be a certain size and a certain look. And they've gotten away from that. I just feel like there's, I guess it's not what it used to be. There's still a certain look they go for, I guess, but it's not as bad as it used to be. We've gone through some horrible periods in the last 15 years of, you know, in the Vince McMahon era, where he was just totally out to lunch and actively harming the product. And I'm so glad he's not there anymore. Just from a fan's perspective and a creative standpoint, the product is just light years ahead of where it used to be. And it actually makes me a little angry because I think of where it could have been then. But you can't go back in time and change the past. So you just sort of move past it and enjoy the fact that we're getting some great wrestling today. Arabian Knight, Bron Breakker as a main eventer needs a new theme. Well, his new theme is better than the old one, and he could always get another new one. Jeremy Rose, Def Rebel out, Metro Boomin in. How is Metro Boomin? I'm not really familiar with him. Is he any good? Boots with the 12. The live and loud meter stayed on yellow during Cena's entrance. It never got to red. The meter buried Cena. Power Spying Games, Elsa once said that she looks like Liv Morgan. Who is Elsa? Are you talking about Frozen? I had to buy a gift for a friend of mine for his kid, and you know, she was big into Elsa, so I bought like an Elsa doll. It's the only Elsa I know. Rizzo with the 5. I might change my avatar and name on here because the F Them Kids Super Chat and now the porn chats. I don't want this chat investigated. It's too late. You're already on some kind of watch list, I guarantee you. And so am I probably now. Thanks a lot. I don't know. You guys keep talking about Elsa. I thought you were talking about Frozen. Who the fuck is Elsa? Sounds like somebody who lives on a farm who has a fucking cow named Elsa. Nick Grasso, did you by any chance see the Lola Vice promo from NXT on Tuesday? Pure cringe. I did not. And now I'm going to make sure I don't go out of my way to watch it at all. Eminem, had to miss most of the stream because of work, but glad that we got the setup for SummerSlam. Or as Simon Miller said, hot WrestleMania. Blonde week Monday. Oh, is that what he calls SummerSlam? Hot WrestleMania? We have WrestleMania hot, WrestleMania cold. K-Dog's Kennel, with Cena's retirement... with Cena's retirement announcement, do you see Cena winning a 17th world title, even if it is a transitional reign? I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely, though. But I think it's possible. If they want him to be the one to set the record, then he'll win the title. And he won't hold on to it for very long. I put the odds of him winning number 17 probably 70-30, saying no. Boney, did you watch Heat and Velocity? Favorite match from either show? I would check it out every now and then. I mean, I used to watch Heat when Heat was a hot show. When Heat first came out, it was a hot show. I mean, Heat was doing ratings in the fives and sixes, which is insane for Sunday Night Heat. But I don't think I have a single match I remember from Heat that stands out to me. And from Velocity, I think many years ago on Velocity, there was a Bryan Danielson match. I don't remember who it was. It might have been, you know what? It might have been Cena. It might have been Cena and Danielson. And that's just wild to me that I think that may have been a match on Velocity years before either one of them were anything special. So to answer your question, no, I really don't have any other matches that I remember from those shows. DEH says, PWN did the Ricochet contract update with Sean Ross Sapp. And today they reported that WWE is in talks with Motor City Machine Guns and that WWE is creating mid-card women's titles. I'm surprised they haven't done it already. I said when they announced the Women's North American Championship in NXT that that was a dry run for a mid-card women's title on the main roster. That's exactly what I said. It's a dry run for a women's intercontinental title. So it would not surprise me at all. You want to count halftime heat? All right, fine. I thought you were just talking regular Sunday night heat, but I guess halftime heat would technically count. So yes, if we're counting that, then halftime heat, Rockin' Mankind 99 is my favorite. I thought that was very entertaining. Anyway, thank you guys for hanging out with me here on this stream. We had a great Money in the Bank stream. Very much appreciate it. All the support. 930 likes. That's awesome. Hit that like button on your way out if you have not already done so. And I will be live with you again on Monday night for Raw. But before that, we have episode 869 of The Sound Off, which is coming up tomorrow. Which is coming up actually just mere hours from now. And we have a... A lot of Money in the Bank fallout to talk about, but also my full review for the WrestleMania 40 documentary. People have asked me about that. I will have a review for that. I will get into that. That will be on episode 869, so you will want to check that out. I'll see you guys back here soon. Thanks for the love.